Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Much as I like this theme, I'm thinking maybe we should only use it on Fridays. That doesn't sound like Friday night. Kick it in. It's a sitcom, maybe, like a funky detective show. It's Max and me and Dave driving down because Dave's the intern for our crime fighting duo, Turbo and Sparky. Can you see it?
Just now I can see it. Yeah, here you guys are coming into focus right now.
It's like a boxcar, a train boxcar.
A boxcar?
Yeah, you guys in a boxcar, an open boxcar going down the ramp.
What decade are you in?
Wide shot as the credits close.
Yeah.
We're on Lakeshore Drive, convertible, top down.
Yeah.
And it well, zooms out to
see, now here's the thing.
Yeah.
Already we got to make an adjustment because one of the members of our crime fighting team is bald. So you can't have the top open unless it's at night.
Could have sunscreen.
Wait, is it for that reason that you would get your head burned?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh.
I don't use the sunroof on the white lighting.
You're kidding.
No.
See, I would think it would be the opposite because when I put the top down on my car.
I used to like playing, well, you have hair. Lovely.
That's what
hair.
I mean. It blows all over, so I have to pull it back.
I used to love playing golf without a hat.
And they can't
do that
anymore.
I bet it's been 20 years since I've played golf with any regularity without a hat.
Oh, okay. I'm saying
I'm just saying that's just a slight note on our opening sequence.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried sunscreen?
On the top of your head there, Harry?
Yeah.
Yeah, but have you noticed the top of my head? That's a lot of sunscreen.
All right.
Yeah.
So, but you can tell, Steve, I'm not sensitive about it at all.
Not at all. No.
All right, 6:12. Let's do the top six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Speaking of those fine people, they also sponsor Lou Manfredini and Lou's First Calls coming up. 312-981-7200 is the number. Get in line now. Don't wait till 6:45 when the segment's over. Get in line now and say, I got a problem right now, and I don't have time to wait for Lou on a Saturday morning. You know, with the calls.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we started Lou's First Call many, 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 many years ago. 312-981-7200 is the number. You texters are welcome. We'll get to as many of those as possible. And I would alert the staff. If there are any whiny staff questions, let's think of those now. Okay? All right. Well, not right now, Dave. I can't help you.
Okay.
Going to need to wait for Lou. President Trump's decision to withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord is being almost universally...
Careful.
People aren't crazy about it.
There you go.
It was hailed by members of the Republican Party in certain segments and sectors, but condemned around the world and a lot by political leaders and business executives, including people who are in the old school gas and oil business, mm-hmm. and people who are in the new school technology business. He cited some very shady, shaky statistics and also didn't seem to understand that it's a voluntary agreement.
Right.
Now, I don't blame President Trump for this because what do we know? We know what I told you 2 years ago, but we all know now that he is not intellectually ready for this gig. He depends heavily on advisors. He admits he doesn't like to read. His briefings are giving to him in bullet points. So something like this may have slid by him. So when he's handed a speech that he has to read, and I think you saw that he struggled with that. That's not the end of the world, but he struggled with reading it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You know that he probably is fairly new to the material. So I don't blame him for not knowing. I blame the people closest to him, including his chief, Reince Priebus, whether I listen to him regularly or not. The people closest to him and the factions and the fighting that goes on in the White House as to whether this is a good decision or bad. Because if you just go on headcount in the White House, apparently the Secretary of State, Jared Kushner, Ivanka, just about everybody else in that line all said, this is a terrible idea, sir. Don't do it. Oh, right. And his attorney in the White House.
Yeah. Rex Tillerson was openly saying, stay in this.
The guy that used to run the big gas and oil company.
Right.
And the two that were for it were the EPA head, who spoke afterwards and kissed Trump's butt so hard I thought we'd need the jaws of life to get his lips off him. And who am I missing? There was somebody else on the Trump team that
Steve
was
Bannon.
Oh, yeah, Bannon, of course. Yeah, because this is Bannon's leg up and leg back in. It's not the end of the world, sir. For everybody on the far left screaming, oh, my God, California and Florida are going to fall into the sea tomorrow. It's going to take 4 years to get out of this, but it's another hugely embarrassing, damaging blow to the American image around the world as being a leader. And I promise you it'll cost us a lot of jobs and a lot of money.
By the way, so you know how we joined Nicaragua and Syria as the only countries not to sign it? So I'm watching the news reports yesterday, and they said, well, Nicaragua didn't want to be in because it didn't go far enough. That's the only reason that they didn't want to be in it.
Well, and Syria didn't want to be in because they got that little war going on.
Yeah, little
children and are being murdered.
Sure, war-torn country.
So there you go. That's where we find ourselves this morning. It's not the end of the world, but it was a really, really bad decision. Oh, and by the way, voluntary. He talks about wanting to renegotiate it. You can't renegotiate the large terms.
No.
But as the United States, if you stay in, especially when you've set up the leverage that you're getting out, and then you decide to stay in, but you want to talk about it, now you've got more leverage when you go into a meeting and you say, okay, I don't want to spend this amount of money on third world countries helping them. I want more people to kick in for that. And also, I'm concerned about coal jobs. I need this politically in my country. There's going to have to be a slower transition into this. He could have done both of those.
He absolutely could have, but...
Well, you heard the paper. Yesterday, we thought it was a terrorist attack. It turned out to be a botched robbery. Mm-hmm. An Ocean's 11 kind of thing gone bad. 36 people died at the biggest hotel casino in the Philippines when a gunman carrying gasoline set fires, caused panic, and tried to rob the joint. Now, there were many gunmen. Were there? Was there just the one?
There was the one.
Oh, it just was one. See, this is what happened, Steve, with witness accounts, right? Because witness accounts, we heard there were people on two. On the second floor, there were people on three. They all said they heard gunshots. And Andre, you see this all the time when you go on to cover these stories. Somebody comes up to you with eyewitness accounts.
Absolutely.
And they mean well, but they don't know.
No, absolutely. There was the one. Yeah, there were initial reports. They thought there were three, and then it went down to two. And then the one who actually, of course, killed himself. Awful story.
Yeah, and even the president yesterday during his event called this terrorism. It wasn't even anywhere near that. I mean, I guess you could
call
it
that. Well, I guess at that point, we didn't know. Not that he should have shot his mouth off, but at that point, we don't know. All right, next. Did you think the travel ban was still in the news?
Oh, my gosh. No, when I heard the SCOTUS, when I heard it yesterday, I thought, wait, what?
I did the same thing.
No, I did the same thing.
The administration has asked the Supreme Court to revive its revised restrictions on travel in the U.S. from six predominantly Muslim countries. You basically need five Supreme Court justices to make this an issue where it goes beyond the five and actually gets to the court.
Mm-hmm.
Does he have five?
I don't think so. I don't think so. By the way, yesterday was photo day. Did you see that for the Supreme Court? It was picture day.
Wasn't it hot in D.C.?
Yeah, and Gorsuch and Sonia Sotomayor were kind of goofing around in the back. It was just very funny. If you have a chance to see the photo, the behind the scenes of the photo.
So class picture goofing around.
Class picture goofing around, yeah. Gorsuch and Sonia Sotomayor were very funny.
Hey, Sotomayor, Gorsuch. Let's go. We got to get this. Imagine if, and let me tell you something, if Sandberg were there and they were taking the picture, that sucker would have been done in 10 minutes.
10?
Let's go, we're out here, we're in our robes, it's hot, let's get back inside.
Click.
Elon Musk was amongst several prominent people, who, including Bob Iger, the head of Disney, who pulled out of presidential councils due to the decision to withdraw from the Paris Accord. More of those decisions likely to come today. They're generally honorary advisory positions, but it's just, again, for a president deeply concerned with headlines, not good headlines. Astronomers said they detected space-time vibrations. Notice, you don't. Steve Kozanich can't hear right now.
I know.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing that rocks his world like this. He loves these wave stories.
You know, Steve, I'm going to give you my mom's number because she called yesterday and she was fascinated with the story about us going to the
sun. Plus, we had two giant black holes that ran into each other.
Yep. Boom.
Yeah, and how many billions of light years away did this happen and we were able to detect it all the way over here?
I don't know, but
I think it was like 10. It was billions of light years away that we.
I saw it.
Yeah. Oh, you
saw it. I saw it. I got an Amazon telescope delivered in a day on Prime. And that's why you got to join Prime.
With your binoculars?
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it. It was cool. Yeah, it was totally cool. The funniest thing I heard, though, was there's two things. One's political, but that we're sending a ship, Steve, directly into the sun?
We are. And it's named after, the University of Chicago is kind of involved with it, but it's going to, we're going to get as close as we can to the sun to learn more about.
But is it a flyby before he melts, or is he crashing right into the sun?
I think they're going to It's got a collision course with the sun, is the way I heard it.
And it's a whole weird thing too. Like the heat is higher, they think, out from the sun. The sun's rays, when you get close to the sun, the temperature is higher than it is on the sun. How's that possible?
That's what got Icarus into trouble.
Probably. Right. Oh, okay. Well, Steve will explain this to all of us later. And good luck, Steve, with your vibration stuff, giggling when they happen. And Sunday Night with Megyn Kelly premieres this week. Megyn Kelly has got a pretty good get on week one. Vladimir Putin sitting down.
I'm going to watch this, aren't
you? With Megyn Kelly.
It's going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah. I listen, she'll get after him. He'll pretend he doesn't speak English. But, yeah, it should be very good. Of course, she sort of softballed Trump when she finally sat down.
Yeah, and I was weirded out
but
yesterday.
Maybe she's got to make up for it now.
I was weirded out with all the selfies yesterday. I got the one-on-one with Vladimir Putin. Here's a picture of me posing in the sun.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this thing's going to be on up against 60 Minutes. It's going to be an interesting dynamic there, right?
Yeah, but they're hyping this, the Megyn Kelly thing. It'll have a big week one. Beyond that, we don't know, right?
Yeah.
American Weathermakers, Heating, Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Back with Lou next. Thanks for the sponsorship of this and that on 720 WGN.
It's Lou's First Call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
It's the time of the show.
Lou Manfredini live at Channel 9. Good morning.
Morning, sir.
So I'm minding my own business. I'm not hurting anybody.
Right.
Looking up on the TV.
Yeah.
And there I see Mr. Permaseal himself driving his car down the road.
Hey.
And all of a sudden, it's a two shot. Or I should say they panned to the guy in the
passenger seat.
Cut to the guy in the passenger seat. It's Lou.
I was navigating.
Yeah.
Right.
Lou and Mr. Permaseal.
Me and Roy driving around.
Roy Spencer driving around picking up chicks.
The camera crew in the back sweating through their clothing because it was so hot when we shot that.
How long
did it
take you to shoot that?
A day.
Is it a year? I've never seen it.
Yeah, it was a year ago.
I think you should do a sequel. I think it was that good.
Well, the next one is we're gonna do like a whole Thelma and Louise thing and go right off of some cliff somewhere.
Oh, but they'll have like an Ace Hardware car bungee cord that catches a car before it crashes and brings it back up.
You guys can go off Navy Pier, Lou.
Right. Just,
like, keep going east.
Or that bridge like in Blues Brothers. Remember when they did thing in Milwaukee?
Cal City.
I think it's safer off Navy Pier.
You know what I love about this show?
The coherence of it?
Well, yeah, the fact that Dave just throws out a little Greek mythology and everyone just moves on.
What Greek mythology? Yeah.
I mentioned Icarus.
He mentions Icarus.
I thought that was really good.
It was very good. I was.
What do you guys think? You're on BZ? You're on the Steve Cochran show.
Wait, let's have a long pause.
It was intelligent.
Don't talk. It'll be
that's
like
my point.
Radio.
You're on the Steve Cochran show.
Okay, sorry.
Tom's from Lansing.
I liked it, Dave. I love the reference.
Thank you, Lou.
Right. We'll have the SAT portion of the program later. Tom from Lansing, what's your question for Lou?
Yes, good morning, everyone. Happy Friday. One thing that's been eating at me, I've got ceiling fans in the house. Some of them are older model, and they are not remote control. I wanted to know if that friendly hardware place has anything for me that I can convert my ceiling fan to a remote control type.
Literally a remote that you held in your hand or on the wall?
Yes, held in the hand.
There's not a system that I know that you can retrofit that would be cost effective. There is a switching system that you can buy a retrofit kit for any ceiling fan that uses that's electronic that allows you to put a fan control and light control on the wall, and then gives you the ability to dim and change speeds on the wall with even what's called a two-wire installation. But if you want to get into a remote one, those older ones, by the time you, if something like that exists, it's going to be well over $100, and you're better off buying a fan, just a brand new fan, because they're not that expensive.
What are they now? Like a remote controlled ceiling fan?
I mean, a decent one, you're talking about $120. You know, maybe you can find them for less than that.
Tom, I'd give you the cash if you were here, but you're not. So
Emerson.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, Casablanca still make very good fans. Hunter is probably the big name.
You can buy those in a lot of places. You probably sell them at Ace Hardware.
Yeah, I mean, the hardware stores sell fans. It's not their bread and butter, No. But I'm going
to
be honest. I don't want people to go there and think there's going
to
be a huge selection. There's some stores do have a nice selection, but
definitely don't go to Ace Hardware.
No, don't say that.
I have a remote control fan. They're
who's
really
the Icarus
nice.
Now? Who's the guy melting next to the sun now?
You can order fans online, though. It's easy.
I have an April. Well, we want people going to the retail stores. We don't want any more jobs to go away.
Right.
April Air Wi-Fi thermostat, allowing you to adjust the temperature of a home's air on your smartphone. Brought to you by American Weathermakers, home of the 60 Minute Men. 855-955-HVAC. And Tom, that's for you for being the first caller.
Oh, very good. Thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
Thanks for listening. Don't hang up. Hold on. Whiny staff questions, ladies first.
So, Lou, this is Mary Sandberg.
Really?
Boyle.
Got it.
I have in our master, before we bought our house, the people redid the master, and we have those, we have two sinks that are like, they look like a bowl on top of the counter, you know, which I dislike, but that's a whole separate thing.
Not a fan of the vessel sink?
I'm not, and plus they use the faucet is one of these like fancy ones that sticks far out into the middle of the sink. Well, when you're washing your makeup off,
boy,
the
doesn't
faucet your hits nose. Your head.
Boy, doesn't Lou and Dave know it.
Right.
The water goes, like, you need the faucet back so you can put your face over the bowl.
Right, right,
but
right.
Whatever.
All right, so here's the problem. Archimedes is on hold, so we're going to need to move forward.
So, all right. Now, if you're going to say it properly, the correct pronunciation. What is it?
In my sink, and we got that drain stuff that you told everyone to use. I forget what it's called.
Instaflow?
Yeah, we use Instaflow. But when I'm washing my face, the sink fills up. Like the bowl fills up like 4 or 5 inches, but then it all rushes down at once. So I know like the hole must work or the pipe must work because the water goes rushing down only once it gets to a certain level, though. Like,
right.
What's the deal?
Those vessel sinks, you know, typical sinks have an overflow little pipe, a hole on them that acts as a separate vent to help the water flow down the drain quicker.
Okay.
When you have a bowl like that,
this is the part. He always gets choked up when he's talking about bowls.
When you have a bowl like that that doesn't have a vent, it can be problematic, especially with that type of faucet that you have. It's probably unrestricted, so the speed of the water coming out is overpowering the drain's ability to go. Now, if it's an older home, it could be a clog in the wall that's slowing that down as well. So it isn't a question of the piping coming off of that sink. It could be that the where it all connects and goes to the wall needs to be rotted out a little bit.
Okay.
And that'll help. But it is an inherent issue with those vessel sinks because there's no venting and it's like
that
filling up a bowl,
yeah.
You know, like if you're cooking.
Yeah,
you
I understand
right.
that.
You got
to
move.
That basically.
No, you got to move. You've been in a house a year.
Now this totally gives her the argument of we have to change all these sinks.
Yeah. Well, I want it gone anyway. And our block party is on Saturday and my parents are coming because we're having their birthday dinner. And he asked if the guy was going to be there that has the unevenly spaced planters that I've complained about in the past.
Oh, well, let us
did
know.
Did you get this
listen,
from your
you
father?
Need
is this all from your dad? Are you throwing this
I did get
your
this
dad under
if
your
you
butt
need
the bus?
Bail. Yeah. After you two, or more importantly, if Dick needs bail, have him call us.
You know what, though? She's talking about it, so this is a good first step.
Right, right.
She's not, like, taking action. She's discussing it first. It's like therapy.
Is talking about, a robbery, okay if you eventually rob someplace?
Is it premeditation?
Well, I can't wait to see the dash cam video, though, when they're watching her like poor Tiger Woods.
To be strong, right?
Right?
That'd be strong. Mary Vannevelle, quick question from you before we get to Dave.
Oh, I'm just having problems with those carpenter ants. How do you get
rid
of those things?
Yeah, and I got Terminix
all
in there.
My
like
sink.
Terminix is coming to the house every 15 minutes.
This is the thing right now. It's because it's been so wet. You have to sprinkle around the perimeter of your home with a couple different products. Taro and Bonide both make really good ant sprinkle shakes that you can go around the entire home. And then inside, you need to use those bait stations. And they will take that and take it back. And it takes about 3 days for you to really see.
The only thing, Mary, I would recommend is when you put the taro bait station down wherever you think the ants are coming from, stay away for a while. Because if you walk in, turn the light on, it looks like the baton death march for ants as they all line
it's
up
crazy.
To go in.
It's
and you'll
crazy.
Never get that image out of your head.
My husband put one right next to the toaster yesterday. It freaked me out.
Yeah, you don't want that. You don't want to see
well,
that.
Here's the thing. The other mistake that everybody makes is I don't want it on air. In other words, it's an attractant. So you need to put it down on the floor. If you put it on the counter, you're going to bring them up to the counter.
Right.
Oh.
So you need
and they
to
might,
keep
they
it
might
down
peel
on the
off
floor.
Their
that's
line and go to the old country buffet of crumbs.
Right.
Dave, quickly.
Okay, very quick. This is also a bathroom question, Lou. My wife wants to have our bathtub painted.
Yep.
Are there any risks in that? Are there any pitfalls we need to watch for?
It's a 5-year proposition. I have no problem with anybody having their tub refinished. You know, if you have it done professionally, there's a bunch of different companies that do it.
What if it's a lead-based paint and it affects your junk?
Well, the lead-based, I learned a term last night that I can't even say on the radio that I never heard. It made me feel like
say it on
man.
TV for fun.
Okay. Anyway, if you go into it, you just have to know that, you know, if you spend $1,000 to redo the tub, in 5 years, you're going to start to see a little chipping. So just go into it knowing that that's what you're getting.
Five years.
Thank you.
5 years. That's it.
Thanks.
Grub deal for your lawn from a listener, a texter. Actually, the bear is asking this, a regular texter, the bear.
You know, the grub, typically it's June when you apply the grub treatment down. So now would be the time to do it. It's been so wet, I would get on that. That's a mistake that a lot of people are going to make. So there's several different makers of it. I don't really care which brand you use. But now, early June is when you put it down.
Getting the worst plugs ever today from you.
Well, I'm just trying to be happy.
Get on TV. Sponsored by American Weather Makers. Thank you for that. And thank you, Lou.
Love you.
Love you. See you, bye. By the way, somebody just texted in and said, Lou's wrong. You can buy a conversion kit for ceiling fans at Lowe's and Home Depot and Menards and places like that for about $30. I'm an electrician, and they work.
There you go, yeah. Those remotes
I would
are great,
never,
though.
Listen, I can't speak to the electrician's crazy claims that Lou is wrong. I would never do that. Because then where would I use the free calls I make to Lou whenever I have a problem? Sure. American Weathermakers, Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men, bringing you Lou on a Friday.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
Coming up on 645, it's Friday. You know, I believe we ought to be a little more positive going into what will be, if the forecast holds, the best weekend we've had all year. So later in line with that thought of being more positive, Time Magazine this week has five world leaders who are less popular than Donald Trump. So I think we could take some joy in that.
Oh, there you go.
So we'll get to that. Remind me or I'll forget.
You said less popular.
Less popular.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the more popular list, I mean, that's 10 shows. See what you made me do?
Uh-huh.
645. If you're like me, you coached your kids throughout their growing up years and loved almost every minute of it. We all want the best for our kids in sports, but it seems like now more than ever, we've gone over the top. I mean, I remember 10 years ago with Ross literally having to ask a couple of fathers and a couple of mothers, moms have never been louder, to not come. And one father actually had a folding chair. He'd sat down the right field line like he was the human foul pole because he was just making his kid cry. You know, just cranking them up too much. So are we over-professionalizing, or are we professionalizing in general youth sports? Nice enough to join us at this early hour is Dr. Bradley Dunlap. Can talk about this rising epidemic. Is epidemic too strong a word?
I don't think it is. I think this is a trend that's been happening for a number of years, and we're seeing kids at a younger and younger age just choosing one sport to play at the expense of other sports, and I think that has certainly some detrimental effects, both physically and potentially mentally as well.
Now, you deal with the physical at North Shore in orthopedic and sports medicine. What are the injuries you're seeing now that you wouldn't have seen 20 years ago?
Well, certainly we're seeing, and this isn't just anecdotal, there's studies to back this up.
Well, you're a scientist. You can't be anecdotal.
Right.
Yes.
But certainly lower extremity overuse injuries, so knee injuries, foot and ankle injuries. And then certainly in the baseball and softball world, we'll see more throwing injuries. So overuse shoulder, overuse elbow injuries. There's this entity called Little Leaguer's shoulder and Little Leaguer's elbow, which are stress fractures across the growth plate. So this is literally, in some respects, a kid throwing his arm off his body. So the good news is the answer is rest. The problem is it's harder than you would think to get sometimes these kids to rest.
We had pitch counts. We were one of the first generations 10 years ago. And the first leagues, maybe 10 to 15 years ago, to have pitch counts. But that must mean kids, even if you're going by the rules, are practicing at home a lot.
Right. They're practicing at home. And then these pitch counts as well tend to be league specific. And so if someone's maybe playing in a couple different leagues, the onus really becomes on the parents, in some respects, the kid to enforce that, which is hard to do. And, you know, there's more and more single sport facility training facilities that are out there. And so, you know, you don't need to be throwing 100 pitches in December if you're a 12-year-old kid.
Do you see too much? I mean, I know so many parents have their kids in, you know, three activities a day, you know, for the girls, softball, gymnastics, ballet, for the guys, football. Is that too much? And if so, at what age should you start to dissipate that and focus on one or two of your favorites?
Well, in some ways, we're actually looking for different sports, because you know those sports you mentioned might work different things. So someone who's playing softball is going to use their shoulder a lot, but maybe in gymnastics you're using their legs and their core. So in that respect, they're actually developing different gross motor skills and actually probably are preventing overuse type injuries because they're doing different sports. I think at that young age, you're actually looking for different sports. Now, maybe you change those seasons up a little bit so you're not doing, you know, four or five things a day. But, you know, if your kid's having fun, I think at the end of the day, that's what you're looking for. Probably when you get to high school, maybe you look at doing more single sport specialization. But early on, I would just to look at doing multiple sports in different seasons.
So it's okay to do multiple sports, but just in moderation?
I think it's great. You just have to plan a sport. If you're, you know, you take different seasons, you say this is the sport for this season, this is the sport for this season, and it lets these kids develop different skills, and again, it prevents burnout from a certain sport.
And look, here's the hard thing, and I want to get Dave in here because Dave needs some help on a splitter. the hard thing is you have dreams for your kids, and you're well-intended in almost all cases for parents, but the chance that your child is going to grow up and make their living as a professional athlete is really, really small. And I think if you wrap your head around, I mean, I preach this all the time, and I wasn't the first person to say this. It's not about you. It's about your kids. Learn the game. Have fun. Play hard. Have fun. So when I come back, I want to get Dave in here, and I think Sandberg wanted to ask a question as well. But I also want to ask you about hockey, because that's your home game.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, so we'll do that in just a second. More coming up on professionalizing kids' sports. .654 And I'm talking about your kids and you, Dr. Bradley Dunlop, North Shore Orthopedics Institute, orthopedic surgeon, sports medicine specialist at North Shore, team physician at Evanston Township High School, president of the Youth Hockey Association there, and pretty good hockey player in his own right. Where'd you play in college?
Yale.
So,
you know, that slacker school.
Yeah, because I actually called hockey. The first thing I ever did in sports radio, I was a color guy in hockey even before I knew what I was talking about at, 20. I guess I was 20, calling Cornell games. I remember a couple Cornell-Yale games. When did you graduate?
1998. Yeah, Cornell was fun. They used to throw the newspapers on the
Yeah. And at Yale, sometimes they would stop. Like, you know, they'd get an odd man breakout, and they'd stop because they had to study. They'd just pull up in a circle.
We got a Yale guy here with the Blackhawks. John Hayden just came up for a couple games.
It's true. It's true. What position were you?
Forward.
Forward.
Defensive forward.
So. Yeah, I was going to say goal scorer. Or
couldn't score. No,
dig him out of the corner.
Right.
Yeah, okay. all right, so let's talk about hockey, because hockey, youth hockey, thanks to the Blackhawks, has never been bigger. What do you want youth hockey parents to hear?
Well, you're right. It's incredible the number of people that are playing hockey. But yeah, it's a seasonal game. I mean, there's no reason to be playing hockey all year round. And you know, I've seen some kids that are great hockey players. You get them off the ice, they can't throw a ball, they can't run, they can't move, and you think, gosh, this kid needs to sign up for baseball, lacrosse, soccer, something else. And instead, their parents sign them up for three more hockey camps. And you really want to become a better. If you're going to become a better hockey player, become a better athlete. There's no coach that doesn't want a better athlete to become. You know, you're going to be a better hockey player if you're a better athlete. I think that's true for all sports.
No question about it, Dave.
Two questions. First of all, I want to get back to pitching. At what age, is there still debate over at what age a kid should be throwing a curveball? And also, with all these changes designed to police concussions better, are they working?
Well, first about the curveballs, there's not really a defined age. I mean, certainly we're looking at teenage years before you're looking at throwing curveballs. The amount of stress that puts on an arm just predisposes you to those injuries we were talking about earlier with the elbow and shoulder. But definitely looking at into your teenage or even your high school years before you're looking at doing that.
Okay.
In terms of concussions, you know, I think we're doing a much better job in terms of concussion awareness. And the problem with concussions is it's such a self-reported issue. So education is going to be the biggest thing in terms of educating participants, players, coaches, parents. Those are the things that we need to do. And I think we've done a phenomenal job. Obviously, there's a long way to go because at the end of the day, you know, we don't really know what the future holds. We're looking at all these CTE, these traumatic encephalopathy issues, and those are the things that we don't know where this ends up.
Do you find a lot of parents push their kids into the sports that they wanted to do? You know, like, oh, Dad is a big hockey fan or football fan, and maybe, you know, little Johnny wants to play tennis or golf or something like that.
Yes, and I'm guilty, too. I have two of my kids playing hockey, but yeah, I think they do. I think it's a natural thing. You're aware of it. You know what's going on. Though sometimes
are you aware of it though? Are the parents listening to that?
That's a good question. I think you're aware that you're aware of that sport, so you know what's involved with that sport. It's familiar, so it's an easy thing to get your kid into. I find watching my kids play soccer is much more enjoyable because I don't know anything about soccer, and I just sit there and cheer them on. Whereas watching them play hockey, I'm a little bit more critical, and it's not quite as enjoyable parent experience.
Well, I got to tell you, and it's funny because I know Ross listens to the podcast every day, and I love golf, and used to be decent. Those days are gone. But it breaks my heart, might be a little strong, but it bothers me that I think I ruined golf for him because when he was playing golf as a kid, I didn't make it fun, you know, because he was a good athlete and a good baseball player and, you know, was interested in other things. And I thought, man, it's so much you and me and a golf course, you know, he's a little kid. We used to close it down. We'd play till dark and all that. But I remember we play together, like you're talking about with your kids. I get stressed out, and I'd say something about his swing or whatever, right. And I just think I didn't make it fun for him. And now, you know, he'll play a couple times a year, but that's only because, you know, he knows I'd like him to. Right. And it's time. I mean, we have a great relationship. It's time for us. But, you know, I just feel like that's a real-world example like you're talking about. You could ruin hockey for your kids. Maybe I ruin golf for my kid, that type of thing.
Right. And you think about it as a parent, why'd you sign your kid up to play a sport at age 5 or 6? Probably to get him some exercise, get him some friends, let him have some fun. And then something happens along those next 10 years where the mindset has totally changed. And so how do we get back to that mindset? Hey, my kid's out there having fun. Really, you want to tell your kids, I love watching you play soccer. I love watching you play lacrosse. Instead of saying, boy, you should have done this. You should have hustled here. You should have done this. Being less critical and just letting
play
fun.
Hard. Play hard. Have fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah, play hard. Play, have fun and be a good sport. And Dave, you can speak to this too before we let you go. There's another lesson that I think goes with all this aside from the physical side, Doc. And that is, we talked about this off the air. Yeah. The time you have with your kids up until they're 18 might seem like forever. Once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah, is it ever?
Yeah, and when it's gone, you miss it and you look back. So as you go into another summer of 75 league games and a travel schedule that's going to keep you in the car going from one game to another, I don't know that that's quality time. And you might want to look back and go, what if we had 2 weeks at the lake? Or what if we took a vacation here and there? I'm not judging anybody. I'm just saying maybe learn from the rest of our mistakes at different times.
I completely agree. And we're just talking about one child. Let's say you have other children that are doing this, and now the families are split. And so I have kids that play travel sports. All three of my kids do. So I'm certainly a believer in travel sports and working hard and really working at one sport. But you need to have a balance, like you said. You need to be able to not spend the Memorial Day weekend at all these different tournaments for whatever it is. So.
Well, Doc, you're good. And the next hockey injury I have, I'm coming to you.
Fair enough.
North Shore Orthopedic Institute, thank you for that as well and the work you're doing there and the work you're doing with the kids in Evanston. You want to say your kids' names? So, you know, you can always get some credit.
Say hi to Will, Abby, and Ella.
Okay, there you go. Cool. Nice to see you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Come back with the news next on 7. Oh, you got a website or something we should plug if you want more information maybe at North Shore?
Northshore.org.
Okay, good. So you look for a little help there, huh? Look for the pass. News next at 720 WGN.
When my early morning day begins and the sunlight hits my face, I've got the sound of WGN. 720 locked in place. Now I've tuned to you, and the day's all bright with me. Yeah, 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 yeah. The voice and wake up call. I know that it can only be the Steve Cochran Show.
Happy Friday. Show number 917. Hey, what? Weren't we going to do Dave's birthday, late birthday party today?
Yeah, I think we are today. It's a surprise.
Mary, did you bring a cake?
I did.
What?
Well, okay. You should put a little asterisk by Mary brought a cake.
Sandberg, readjust the entire schedule so we have time to present the cake and my fabulous gift.
No, Mary, this is no offense to you.
Yeah. You saw the cake?
Well, I heard about the cake.
Oh.
What, do we have cake trouble?
Don't.
Is this why there's police tape around the refrigerator?
I had some issues with the cake, but it's the effort that counts.
Yeah, no, it's not even the effort.
Let's not be cake judgmental.
Yeah.
Well, wait till you hear the flavor of the cake.
All right, we'll find out.
All right.
Okay. At 7:14, my friend Bob Bettinardi makes the best putters in golf. Now, you might be saying, really? Why are we talking about this, Steve? Let me tell you why we're talking about this. Bob Bettinardi and the Putter Lab that he set up years ago, right here in Tinley.
In Tinley, right? Yeah, where I grew up.
Is where the best putters in the world are made. And with your mom or dad who loves golf, you know, you got to get a gift for mom coming up, or certainly Father's Day. Hello.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, this is the way to go. A couple of years ago, I took Kevin Paul. You might remember Kevin. He used to work on the show. And took Kevin out there at Christmas time and got him a Bettinardi putter. He's been putting with it for 2 years. He's never putted better. Now, I wouldn't know because he's a trader and he left for Rose Show, so I haven't seen him in 2 years. But I'm telling you, it's the biggest part of your game. It makes a complete difference. And I asked Bob to come on the show and talk about his putters. Good morning, sir.
Hey, Steve. How you doing today?
Nice to reconnect with you. How are things?
Oh, things are great. Yeah, couldn't be better. I mean, this is our time to shine right now, especially in the summertime. We've made all of our product throughout the winter months, and now it's time to sell it.
And is it tough to come up with, for the finicky, high-level player, the new thing, when you're also trying to come up with the thing that the regular player who really wants to commit to get better needs as well? Because there's a big difference, right?
You know what? There really isn't a big difference. There's a pyramid of influence in the golf industry, and it's the people who are playing every week for the millions of dollars
right.
on TV, and those are the guys who the low handicaps look to, and then the medium handicaps look to low handicaps, and so on and so forth. So the pyramid of influence is what you see on TV and what are those guys playing. And being that we have guys like Matt Kuchar and Keegan Bradley Freddie Couples and so on. Those are the people.
And Steve Cochran.
Yeah.
And Steve Cochran, of course.
Yeah. The key thing when you go, well, talk about the lab for a second, because this is, I don't know anybody else that does it this way. And you go out to the putter, because you go out to a driving range, you're banging balls, and then you go, oh, I should hit a couple of putts.
Yeah, explain the lab.
And you go to the green, and you hit a couple of putts. So we're going to use Andrea as a real-world example here, Bob. Because remember back at Christmas time, I talked to you about Andrea. I'm finally going to bring her out.
Yep.
And what happens when she comes out to the lab?
Well, it's called Studio B, and it is in Tinley Park, Illinois. And we have a four-camera laser vision system that literally when you're we put you on the just the regular putting green, so to speak, and the cameras are looking at the golf ball coming off the face of the putter. And a lot of times, and we don't really try to tell you how to putt or line you up to putt,
right?
But we'll line up, we'll line you up, but I mean, we like to adjust the putter to the player. So if you come in and, you know, you're like Jack Nicklaus, who was hunched over when he putt, or, you know, somebody else who putts more upright, that's fine with us. We'll adjust that putter, and we'll adjust the length, the loft of the putter, and the lie of the putter. The lie meaning like the angle that, you know, it's supposed to be at. And then you'll see, in the beginning, you'll see your ball, when you first come in, it may be hopping, it may be jumping off the face, but within 20 minutes to 30 minutes after being on this four-camera system, you'll see the ball coming off so smooth off the putter face. And that's really what you want. You want that ball coming off with hardly any bounce or any skid, so it has a straighter line toward the hole.
Yeah, because these are all custom-made, and what we know is you go into, you know, PGA Tour Superstore or Dick's or whatever, you buy a putter off the rack, well, it might be fine. But it also might be, you know, 4 degrees upright when you ought to have 1 degree, and the difference between 1 and 4 is big when that's more than half your game. So you can invest $500 in a driver. I'm not saying you shouldn't, but you ought to invest money in putting, and this is the way to go. So if people, well, I'm going to bring Andre out, but when people want to do like a gift certificate for their dad or a gift card, do you guys do that?
Oh, yeah.
So what do they do?
Well, they would go to Bettinardi.com or they can call 708-802-7400. And you could do one of those two things, but we have it right online that you could get a gift certificate. We have a great staff also. I mean, we don't go to voicemail. Everybody answers phones at my place. And we take care of our customers very well.
I think it's fantastic. I'm excited to come out there because I've used a small putter. I've used a tall putter, Bob. So I'm anxious to get fitted. What is the biggest error that you see? Is it that people aren't properly fitted for their putter?
I think so. For sure, when people come in, the length, some people come in and their length is too long, and their arms are kind of crunched. So you want your arms to hang down when you putt. At least that's what most of the – when I'm on a PGA Tour, I see all kinds of people putting, but they do have a few, three or four specifics that they work on all the time. And we try to tell the people, and almost immediately – when we adjust the putter, you're going to see that ball just come off that face and start going in the hole. We have a hole at the end of the putting green, and you'll start seeing that thing going in there. You'll be amazed.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I've been friends with Bob for a long time, and he's got me in three or four different putters through the years. I never want to give the one back. He goes, try this, try that. And the one I've had now for the last two seasons, I love it.
I can't wait to get
so
one.
Keep up the good work, Mr. Bob.
Well, listen, I appreciate it, Steve, and thank you so much, Andre. You guys have a good one today.
Right. We'll see you out there, Bob.
Yeah, we'll see you out at your place, Bob Bettinardi. Bettinardi.com, BETTINARDI.com, or 708-802-7400. The other thing for golf for Father's Day, I'm going to see if Emil Esposito will jump on and talk about lessons because he's the best teacher right now.
That would be great. He absolutely is. And they're going to start calling me one putt, by the way.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Dave, you're next. But I did not get it for this birthday. Traffic from Mary.
Okay. I have another one like 12 months from now, Steve.
They do come up regularly. Traffic from Mary, and then House Republican leader Jim Durkin on the budget debacle after that on 720 WGN. House Republican leader Jim Durkin joins us now. Always nice to have you on the program. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. What's your level of frustration for the week and in the middle of this quagmire?
Level of 1 to 10, 10 being the worst. I'm at about an 8.
Yeah. I'm 8.5, and I can see 9 from here. How is it that the House, led by Mike Madigan, my good friend, how is it that the House hasn't or wasn't able to at least put a budget forward?
Well, I haven't heard from them, and I haven't heard from their members. I think they're afraid to vote for a tax increase, but that's my gathering. But the fact is, the Senate passed their version of a budget. They passed a tax increase. I think that it shows that the Democrats who run Springfield don't know what they're doing. They're not quite sure what their game plan is. So they took the path of least resistance. Let's not give the governor a budget, and let's take the calculation that the governor, by not signing a budget, will lose politically. And, Steve, I've been saying this from the beginning of the year. If we don't pass a budget that's balanced, negotiated by the end of May, this is about the governor's reelection and nothing else.
Yeah, it is. But I would also say, even in a state this Democrat, this is about everybody's job. And for the politicians, and you've been very upfront about this, saying, listen, I don't get reelected, but we have to do what's right for the people. Because, you know, the thing that makes me crazy, and I've said this to the governor, and he'll be on in about a half an hour as well, is, you know, God bless you for repping us, all of you guys and ladies, and the work that you're doing on behalf of us. We can pick it apart all day long, and Lord knows I do. But you're not entitled to the job, and you don't get to keep the job because you're there. And the bare minimum ought to be get a friggin' budget done. This is what's so outrageous. This is not something extraordinary. This is 101. This should never even be a topic.
No, it shouldn't be. It should be. And, you know, you just said my level of frustration is pretty high. You know, and I'm a legislator, but, you know, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a taxpayer, and I'm embarrassed by what has happened to the state. I am so embarrassed. I say this every day, and I keep saying we got time, but I'm beginning to doubt that there is a plan to ensure that nothing happens, and you know, people don't believe it, but Democrats are more interested, this is my opinion, more interested in regaining power. They are prepared to let the state slip further into the abyss.
Right.
That's what it's about.
And
I hate to say that, but Steve, I've been down here long enough. I know how this thing runs. I know the attitude.
Oh, believe me, I believe it. I absolutely believe it. I completely believe that's the case. And that should offend everybody on every level.
Representative, lawmakers failing to reach the budget deal, but they did manage to approve a 28% tax increase for cell phones and landlines for Chicago residents. I think people are pretty upset about that. And also, yesterday, the state's bond rating was downgraded to just one step above junk status, the lowest bond rating of any state in U.S. history.
Exactly.
It's horrendous.
It is horrendous. There hasn't been a balanced budget produced from Springfield in, I can't remember the last time. It may have been back in, under George Ryan. And, you know, they want to see, the bond houses want to see stability, want to see not just a budget, they want to see a balanced budget. An unbalanced budget has put us in the position of having these $13 billion of unpaid bills. They also look at that, and it also factors heavily when they make the decision of how they're going to grade Illinois' debt. In city of Chicago, residents should be upset. I did not support that telecom bill. It was a good bill. It was a bill that, in its original form, was going to transform our aged telephone systems we have. And in the last minute, the city of Chicago dropped in a $1.50 increase for their 911 services, 911
right.
program. And, it's just more money.
Well, that's the thing, because for people like Andre who live in the city limits, the city residents are getting bled to death already. And the mayor's got to find money somewhere. And I'm not beating on the mayor here. I'm just saying they're going to continue to find money until people say you can't have any more. And for the larger math change that went to state school funding, this is the tipping point issue, as Pat Brady has said many times, because when it comes to your front door and suddenly the teachers are out or the schools aren't opening, then maybe people will take this as seriously as they should. Because until that day comes, the people that are being hurt the most are the people that can take it the least. And we will pay that bill down the road as well.
Well, the governor's going to veto that education bill. That is so lopsided. And secondly, there's no money to pay for it. And that's why I'm trying to figure out how this is going to be implemented, because it requires close to $400 million from the state to be able to pay for that program. And we don't even have a damn budget. I just don't know what goes into people's minds when they vote for this stuff. It's a cruel hoax. It's something that's happened for years. We pass a bill and we say we're going to solve all the problems, but nothing gets done. So let's say if that does become law, that education bill becomes law, it's going to put another $350 million in the backlog of bills. And I just don't know where that money's going to come from. I mean, unless someone is accepting monopoly money, but it's not. So
I know you're not giving up. But over the course of the next 2 to 3 weeks, because the jobs become exponentially harder now you need a bigger vote number to get anything done. Is there any reason to believe, with your experience in the position and in Springfield, that we will see anything but a continuing resolution to pay for things for the next 6 months at that legally mandated level, and this problem just continues to be a $15 million thrown out the window cancer every day?
There is, if there is a membership revolt against the speaker, my members are prepared to do the right thing, and I've said this from the beginning of the year. There's tough votes we got to make, but I'll put my votes together. But the fact is, it's a one-way street. Respect my caucus's priorities, and we'll respect yours. But I'm prepared to put the votes on something that's fair for Illinois, it's responsible, but one that is uniformly going to have to be, everybody's going to have to make some sacrifices. But I'm prepared to do that.
And Speaker Madigan is invited on the show anytime. He is now in 917 consecutive days of not showing up. But again, he doesn't have a phone in his office, so it's hard to reach him. I have considered maybe riding my horse down and stopping somewhere along the way to use a telegraph to get it to him. But he knows this show. He knows how I feel. And if I were saying the things, or I should say if he were saying the things about me that I've said about him, I'd want to come on and say, no, you're not right about this and that. And the opportunity still exists. If I'm wrong, defend yourself.
Well, he probably won't get a phone now in his Chicago office because there's a 28% tax increase.
I'll pay that for him,
use
too.
The phone?
I'll pay that for him as well.
There's a horse trough outside of 65th and Pulaski. So
all right. Well, there you go. I'll tie it up there and I'll find the telegraph. Mr. Durkin, thank you as always.
Steve, thank you.
There you go. That's Jim Durkin, the House Republican leader. And you can hear the frustration in his voice. I'm sure you'll hear from the governor here in a few minutes.
I think everybody's frustrated. Pass a budget.
Dave and it's sports. Monday was Dave's birthday. But you know the tradition here.
It's an update.
If we get to your birthday within a week of it actually happening, that's a big day. What are you looking at?
I'm just thinking cake and chocolate and delicious and happy. And I'm happy
well,
it's Dave's
start,
birthday.
Let's start with
the
gift. Dave, you and I don't have a gift-giving tradition back and forth, and this isn't going to change it. But I saw this in a gift bag that was given to me, and I thought, how great to re-gift this to Dave.
Yeah.
Plus, there's something that's a little bit of a surprise in here. Sandberg actually wrapped it earlier this
morning. Beautifully wrapped.
Right? Yeah.
And I don't know if you can tell, but it says, Happy Birthday, Dave. Love, Steve. I wrote that myself. So you can pass that over.
Love the wrap job, just so you know, the staples that popped
yeah,
out.
Yeah, don't
not
cut
my
yourself.
Fault.
Looks like a piece of
not
meat.
My fault.
It does look like butcher wrap. Yeah, go ahead, tear it open.
Nice of you.
Be careful, there's a surprise in there.
Uh-oh.
Wow, electronic football.
Ah,
yeah,
that's
nice.
Awesome. So I can just sit here during the show and play.
Play it, why not?
Oh, perfect.
No one else pays attention to me.
Wait a minute, this seems to be in it. There's a $20 bill.
And here's why.
Yes.
You and your son are going to the Cubs game tomorrow?
Yes.
I want to buy you and your son a beer, and that might not cover it.
Well, that's
actually,
true.
You know what?
It will.
Yeah.
Perfectly.
It won't. It won't.
No, wait.
They're $11 now.
Yeah. All right. So bring $2 of your own, Dave.
And a tip.
You need a tip.
Steve, your generosity goes
no bounds.
Words.
I think no bounds is what you're looking for.
Thank you very much.
Meanwhile, we have a cake. And
I don't know if you'll be thanking me after this, Dave.
What is it?
Well, first of all, this is a kale cake.
Oh,
it's kale with applesauce.
Oh,
as you notice,
God.
The cake is a little short. No one can see this, but it
so
looks
it's,
like
it's like a big pancake.
It didn't rise?
It did not rise, and I don't know why. I followed this recipe perfectly.
Because
first of
there's
all,
kale in it, that's
okay,
why.
First of all, with the kale is a pain in the...
Yeah, yes. Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to take the leaf off the kale. You have to boil the kale. You have to puree the kale. Then you have to bake the kale.
That's called massaging the kale. By
Way.
Well, I almost had to do that as well.
All this for you. You know what I would say is the best way to tell if the cake, you know, is edible is how it tastes. But in the case of a kale cake, it's all going to taste like dirt.
I don't know why.
I've never not wanted a cake less. I just... This sounds so
You are eating this, Grisanna.
No,
I have to stuff it down your throat.
Then you just said you really have never wanted a cake more because
no,
you used
less.
A double negative.
I just like the fact that Vandeveld went violent. I'll stuff this cake down your throat.
I just can't get excited over the cake.
This cake was made with much love, Dave, and I will be the first one to eat it.
So this must have taken you forever.
Oh, Mary, you're the best.
You guys are so weird. Oh,
how long did it take you to make that cake?
Well, I had some issues with the blender and a few other things, but
start to finish, a couple of hours.
The blender broke. The blades, the kale broke the blades of the blender.
The woman dedicated an entire evening to your
cake.
I'll
tell you the rest of that story later because I can't tell it on the air. But yes, my
and that'll
husband.
Be in.
I volunteer to drive this thing over to the
hysterically.
Drive away, Steve.
I'm going to drive this thing over to the shed and feed it to the dolphins.
Oh, I'll go with you, Steve.
Something you make a cake next.
I'll
time.
I'll drive.
No. Just eat it, Steve.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Our plan is for the House, Democrats and Republicans, to work through the month of June, continue to work on budget making. We will expect participation by all members of the House. There's a concern. They just don't have a high level of confidence in how the governor has conducted himself.
As you consider what Mike Madigan said there, I want you to ask yourself a question. How could he not know what the other side was thinking? I want you to take Mike Madigan's side here. If what Mike Madigan just said there in that clip, it's from the other day, but in the clip you just heard is true, that means he's completely surprised and flummoxed by what the governor and what the other Republicans in the House want, if he's telling the truth. This has been going on for 2 years. There's no way that can be true. There's no way that he could not know exactly what he wants and exactly what they want.
Well, that's what Rip Pearson said the other day, too, that it was completely strategized to delay the vote or have no vote because now it's harder. Now they need the 3/5 majority and Republican help now.
So, again, in case you're confused, I don't believe the speaker's telling the truth again, and I would like him to come in here and discuss it again. He knows where I work. Joining us now is Governor Rauner. I suppose the first thing, Governor, you want to do is wish Dave Ennett a happy birthday.
Absolutely. Happy birthday. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing fine. And Dave, your birthday was when?
It was Tuesday.
It was Tuesday. The governor also has the same tradition I have where neither one of us get you anything.
That's quite all right. Thank you, Governor.
Sorry for that tradition, but I hope you had a good day.
I did.
All right, good. I'm glad we could start with a laugh because the rest of it, unfortunately, isn't funny. And I sensed a frustration in your voice like I hadn't heard before. I assume you're as frustrated as I am and the rest of us are that we've hit another wall here. And the notion that Speaker Madigan didn't know where the Republicans and where you stand, so he's going to need more time, is a big steaming pile of you-know-what.
That's so true. I mean, it's ridiculous. This is all about political spin. He's a master of spin in the media, phony headlines. That's what all this is. What we've got to do is get here in Springfield and get a balanced budget that's good for the people of Illinois, that funds our human services, funds our schools, grows our economy. What people's positions are clear. I've laid out the reforms I've requested. I've compromised. I've given up on many of them, trying to get a deal done. The speaker's been clear. He wants no changes to the system. He just wants a massive tax hike with no changes. That would just make our problems worse.
You know, I love this city and I love this state like you do, and it saddens me greatly to see the continuing degradation of our image nationwide. But there's also people right now, Andrea, you know this as well, right. They're driving to work right now, and it could be a husband or a wife, and maybe they got a job offer in another state, and they don't want to leave.
No.
But they're waiting to see what the state's future might be like, what their property values are going to be like. Are their kids going to have a school that's going to be funded? And they're probably leaning towards leaving because Springfield is failing. Governor, what do you want to say to them?
I say, I feel your pain 100%. That's the reason I decided to run for governor. People recruited me because they knew that I would stand and get change done. We've been going down a bad road. People are hurting in Illinois. They've been hurting for years. We've been leading the nation in an out-migration or one of the worst states for so many years. People are leaving for better opportunities. We used to be the land of opportunity in Illinois. Now we're not anymore, and we've got to change that. And everywhere I go around the state, people come up to me and say, Governor, I stayed because you ran. I stayed, and I'm still here because you're fighting for us. You're trying to change the system. And I'm going to be here as long as you're in office fighting for change. And if you can't succeed, if these guys block you, or when you're done and you have been able to succeed, I'm leaving. I have had so many small business owners tell me that. I've had so many working families tell me that. I had an elderly woman come up to me and grab my arm the other day, tears in her eyes, and she said, Governor, you're our last hope. Please don't give up. Please stay strong. We need you. I started to tear up. I mean, this is emotional. This is home. We've got to improve our home for our kids and our grandkids. And these career politicians who've been in power for 35 years, they don't give two hoots. They just want their political power and political spin in the headlines. That's all they care about.
Governor, are you going to sign the education bill that basically bails out Chicago public schools? And want to get your reaction to the fact that we now have the lowest bond rating of any state in U.S. history. Where do we go from here? Because this is the reality of what we're dealing with now.
No, that's right. We have been so financially mismanaged in Illinois for so many decades. We've had our bond rating cut again and again and again and again for years. And the trend is continuing because the majority in the General Assembly won't pass balanced budgets. This is how we got over $180 billion in debt in Illinois over the last 35 years. We've got to live within our means and only spend what we bring in. But the majority just doesn't want to do that. They keep rewarding their cronies inside government, the inside politicians, the special interest groups, and we've got to change that.
We do have to change that, but this is where we are now. We have the lowest bond rating. Where do we go from that?
Where we go is changes to our system to grow our economy and cut spending to live within our means. That's where we go. And very quickly, our ratings will improve through economic growth and balanced budgets. And that's what we're fighting to achieve. Now, you asked a very important question, Andrew, about school funding.
Right.
I am a passionate advocate for public schools, especially Chicago public schools. My wife and I have spent most of our lives with our time and our resources helping to improve Chicago public schools. I deeply care about them. I want our students to have a better future in the city of Chicago and to have our teachers properly supported. Before I became governor, we were the worst state in America for funding schools. We had the biggest gap between low-income schools and high-income schools. It's unfair. And I said, more money for schools, and let's allocate it more equitably. We got a good school funding formula commission work recommendation that was turned into two bills, one a Democrat bill, one a Republican bill in the Senate. I said, I'll support either one of those bills with very minor tweaks. Either one is a good foundation bill. What happened? The House, majority there, for the manipulation of headlines, grabbed the Democrats' bill, added on a big amendment, addendum, with a massive additional bailout for the city of Chicago schools. That's not fair to the taxpayers in Oak Park or down in Blue Island or in Harvey or up in Waukegan or Rockford. That's not fair. We need an equitable system for all school districts, and I will continue to work to get that done.
And I would state what I've said 1,000 times before. I think if you look at your reform agenda and what you've cut it down to, there's nothing that anybody should find unreasonable. But I'll leave you with this bang my head against the wall moment here, and that is, if you're dealing with a child who holds his breath until he turns blue, and you still got to live with the child, at some point, have you got to do something else? In other words, can you just say, give me something I can work with, House, the Senate's doing it, give me something I can work with, House, something I can say. Clearly, whatever you're going to sign now for a budget, whenever that day eventually comes, it's not going to be what you wanted. It's not going to be what is ultimately best for the state. But how much longer can we go on before you have to take the ultimate high road and just explain to people, as you have again and again and again, I didn't want this, but this is the best we can do because Mike's not playing along.
Well, that's exactly where we're heading. And the speaker has been clear. He wants no changes. The good news is some members of his caucus in the majority have finally admitting more and more that they know that what we're asking for change is fair and reasonable. They know it's actually good that Democrats want term limits. Democrats want property tax relief. Democrats want government consolidation so we can reduce our property taxes. Democrats want more jobs and know the regulations are crushing our small businesses. They hear it just as much as I do. They're finally willing to admit it. And if we can get enough of them to stand up to the speaker, we're going to get good things done and we'll get a balanced budget. One way or another, we're going to get it done.
There's something called the United States Climate Alliance, which I don't know enough about to know it completely in regards to who's in, who's out. But is that something you could join? And if so, would you?
Well, I don't know much about that. I'm very focused on Illinois, obviously. I'm very proud in Illinois. We have maintained energy diversity and energy options, and I'm very proud. I helped negotiate and sign the Clean Energy Jobs Bill in Illinois. I want to make sure we've got sustainable, renewable energy. I want to make sure we've got options in traditional energy. Illinois deserves to be competitive economically and all energy options on the table.
So regardless of where the president goes or doesn't go, you're doing whatever you can climate-wise for Illinois. Is that the summary?
That's the bottom line. Exactly right.
If you want to look at Governor Rauner's information on what he's been trying to do and what he continues to do, where's the best place to send people?
Yes. So you can go to Illinois.gov, and there it lays out what we're recommending for changes, how we're going to get to a balanced budget, and the status on all the discussions. So you can come right onto the website.
All right, appreciate you coming on.
Thanks so much, Steve. Take care. Have a great day.
Thanks, Mike. That's Governor Rauner, who again makes himself available, whereas Mike Madigan does not. And for everybody who goes, it doesn't come down to those two. Well, those are the two point players in this because Cullerton has been over backwards from his side to do what he could, and he keeps running into a wall. There was a text I wanted to get to. I know we're way late here, but I think it's something that needs to be addressed. 847 texter. Steve, do us a favor. Stop putting Illinois lawmakers on the show. It's aggravating to sit there and listen to them agree with you and then do nothing about it and go back to Springfield and get nothing done. I don't know if you realize that they're using you. They say what the voters want to hear so they can get reelected. Love your show, but I honestly turn it off when a lawmaker comes on. I don't want to turn it off. I'm sure you don't want that, but I can't listen to their BS anymore. Keep them off your show. Keep their asses in Springfield. I appreciate the text. I really do. And I believe me, you're frustrated. How do you think my head feels? Because we talk to all of them here. But the reason I continue to put both sides on and the reason I continue to ask them tough questions, and the fair-minded on the right and the left would agree that they are tough questions, is because somebody has to. You ain't getting this from Eric and Kathy. You ain't getting this from the nightly news. You're not getting this from Steve Harvey. You're sure as hell not getting this from BBM. So I appreciate the fact that you listen here. I'm trying to advocate for you, to speak for you and your concerns in the same way I would hope you would do for me and my family.
And it's also a chance to ask them tough questions, whether or not they answer them or not, from the governor on down.
Right.
Lawmakers, if they have a press conference, say they pass a budget, they're going to have a press conference. They're going to tell you exactly what they want to say.
Right. So I don't. The last thing I want to do is drive you away, because I like when you listen. But the fact is, there will be more lawmakers on, and we'll continue to put them on, all the way from here to Trump and back, when it's relevant. It's 8:02. We're back after this with the news on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
You all right there, buddy?
You heard that?
Yeah, was that a cough? What was that?
That was a cough.
Yeah. Pretty good job of covering. You know, the whole month of April when I was on my deathbed, I thought I was, you know, and I was doing the show from the house several days, I thought I was concealing the cough, and I came in and I said, you guys aren't hearing that. And Sandberg goes, are you kidding me? We heard them all.
You didn't, you thought you were concealing
it? I thought I was concealing the cough, yeah. Remember when I had that horrible cough for a month? Oh, that's right. You heard it.
Did hear that.
How are you, Dean Richards?
I still have my, from when I had the flu, influenza, whatever it was.
Yeah, the whole thing. You had all three syllables. You had the N, the flu, the N, and the four syllables.
I still have a little lingering cough from that. My doctor says it's going to be around for a while.
Yeah, yeah. I think 6 months is really the time it runs out.
It's just about 6 months.
So.
That it's been going on.
I got this, but what's the thing I had? I had the RSV. I had the RSV bronchitis. And by the way, that's what it's called, the RSV bronchitis.
Show off.
In January. I don't think I ever got over it. And then, you know, you throw in a couple of pulmonary embolisms on top of it, and you got nothing but trouble.
Starved for attention.
The bad news for the majority of people who are texting me now, or I should say some of the people are texting me now, is I survived. We got a long list of celebrity news today, but of course we want to get to the movie reviews as well, because there's actually two good ones coming out this weekend, or at least I think they're good. And then I want to hear what you're thinking about this Megyn Kelly interview. But I'm watching House of Cards. Are you a House of Cards fan, Dean?
I have not seen it.
Ooh,
I know everybody tells me you got to catch up, but
first season great, second season third season pretty good, fourth season pretty great. We're into season five now.
Right.
I've only watched two of the episodes. Andre, I think you're on four or five, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm on four, and it gets really good at five.
Yeah, because the problem is nobody knew Trump was coming.
Right.
So when you're doing something about a show being a crazy White House show, you could be scandal, and then eventually you have to take it into cartoon land, right? Because none of the stories will rise to the level of this is interesting
or
because
reality.
You can just go to CNN.
Yeah.
Just watch CNN. So I was concerned House of Cards has the same problem, but I'm encouraged to hear Andrea say it's going to get good.
It does, because it starts off slow, but by five, I think, my opinion, gets really good.
And at Kevin Spacey, Dean, that kid can act.
He can. He's quite the actor. Yeah, everybody's telling me that I can't binge watch. I can't sit and watch.
If I watch two in a row, that's a lot.
Oh, yeah. When I binge, I usually do two.
And I do two in a row. I do it while I'm working.
I've tried doing more than two, like on airplanes. And it's like, I can't. I don't care how good this is.
Yeah.
I can't stand it anymore.
No. There's sunshine.
Right now I am binge watching Jake and the Fat Man. That's good, too.
That's great. Any particular reason?
Really?
William Conrad promo just pop up in front of you there?
I don't know. I'm just I'm a William Conrad fan.
You know what you do on a binge? You know what you binge watch on a weekend? You DVR the Steve Cochran Show SEAL TV Hour, and then Saturday you catch up. In my head, I was asking myself, would I do that?
It's good. It's good viewing.
Yeah, it is.
And now in HD.
That's right. You can see every inch. Better, more clearly. We got the McKenzie brothers getting back together. We got Kathy Griffin news, because that won't go away. Megyn Kelly news and the movie reviews when we come back. Would you hold on for us, Dean? Would you stand by?
Yes.
If Dean survives the break,
I'm still alive. Yeah.
And Andrea has a very important question I think a lot of people are going to identify with. We're going to need your help on this, and that's how the hell do you buy a movie ticket today? Because there's too damn many choices at every theater that's a megaplex.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 9 and 720.
I'll start with the big news. That's your Wonder Woman movie review.
Awesome. Woo.
Awesome is the official review.
Awesome.
Better than you expected?
Yes. I was expecting something good. I was not expecting this movie to work in so many different ways.
Would you give it a Tony the Tiger? It's great.
I'd give it like maybe four or five R's.
Wow, that is impressive.
Yes. In the that may be my new way of reviewing movies.
Yeah.
How many R's do I give it?
Yes.
It's great. I gave it a Dean's List A. It's a it's great for the history and the legacy of the Wonder Woman franchise, going back to, Steve, you remember when she was...
Yeah, and she had the rope of truth.
Well, when she was a little girl on the Amazonian island, the island of nothing but female Amazons.
Yep. As far as you know, I agree.
To suddenly, in the middle of World War One, Europe, fighting the Germans, who she believes... is being led by the evil god of war, so so she is duty bound to destroy him, not only with the lasso of truth, but modeling it all for us today is Andrea Darlis, the tiara, the bracelets, the shield, the god killing.
What was the deal like if she throws a rope around me, I tell her the truth?
You tell the truth.
That's great.
And what did you say to Dean yesterday? At any time Gal Gadot puts a rope around you,
I'll tell her whatever she wants. Right. Anything she wants. Whatever she wants. By the way, I think, what was Wonder Woman's name? The original one?
Linda Carter.
Linda Carter. What Linda Carter did on that show was remarkable, just based on physics.
Yeah,
because those boobs and that outfit running with a rope. Hello, I'm surprised nobody got hurt.
Shield and a sword.
Yeah, she still owns Linda Carter, the original Wonder Woman suit.
She does,
along with the original. Boobs.
Listen to you guys.
Yeah, the boobs are original too.
She does still own it. She still looks great.
She looks fabulous.
She was at the world premiere of the movie.
Oh, that's cool.
She is thanked in the credits of the movie. Would it kill them? This is my only criticism of this movie.
Cameo.
Wouldn't it kill you to put her standing on a corner reading a newspaper?
Cameo.
Oh, that'd be great.
Something.
Fans would have loved it.
Small cameo. They could have done it.
If you like shoot 'em ups this weekend, Captain Underpants. What? Captain Underpants, did you see it?
I gave it a Dean's List B.
How about it?
This will bring out the 10-year-old boy in you, Steve, when you go see this.
I got to take Ross to this.
It's about two best friends, two mischievous best friends, constantly in trouble at school, constantly in the principal's office. Mm-hmm. While they're getting bawled out by the principal, they hypnotize him into believing that he is the superhero that they have created in their treehouse in a little comic book that they draw themselves, Captain Underpants.
Right.
And he becomes the personification of Captain Underpants.
And we're talking about big dad boxers here a cape.
Well, we're talking about giant tidy whities.
Yes. Is that what it was?
Yeah, it's giant tidy whities.
Oh.
And the reason they did that was because most superheroes look like they're wearing their underpants on the outside anyway.
Yeah, that's why I thought they went with the boxers for comedic effect, but I'm wrong.
No. This one, the story arc on this follows some logic.
Yes, of course it does.
That's why there's so much Oscar buzz about this movie.
Yeah, sure.
So this superhero actually wears underpants on the outside. He does lots of things, among them fighting the evil genius.
With his underpants of truth.
Well, no, he doesn't actually have any superpowers.
Oh.
That's the problem with Captain Underpants, but he fights... the evil Professor Poopy Pants.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, somebody's got to stop him.
So you get the level of humor in this.
But it's good. It's funny.
It's nothing but silly farting jokes.
It's great. Bring your grandmother.
Tons of Uranus jokes.
Bring grandmother's friend.
Stuff like that. It's silly. It's actually exceptionally well-written, well-produced, fun, fast-paced. Gave this one Dean's List B. So I like both of the new movies.
All right, so here's the movie question.
Yeah.
So are you on the screen now?
I'm on the screen
now. All right,
now.
So Andrea and a couple of her girlfriends want to go see Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
These are the choices. Tell me.
All right, so
these are the choices.
Literally, Dean, I used to
Where is this, River North? AMC Metro.
No, actually, this is the MovieCo in Rosemont, because we're gonna have a bunch of people from different locations meeting at the MovieCo. Yeah, fancy, right? So I normally would just walk up to the box office, buy my ticket, and go in and see the movies.
Mm-mm.
Now they said buy them online. There are 8 choices.
All right, but give me the choices.
All right, number one. Real 3D, closed caption, reserve seating, no passes, accessibility devices available. Then, Real D 3D, closed caption, Dine-In Express pickup, reserve seating, no passes.
I don't like that one.
Then, Real D 3D, closed caption, Premiere, reserve seating, no passes.
What does that mean, Premiere?
Dean, what does that mean, Dean?
No idea.
Okay, next.
Okay, next one. Real D 3D, closed caption, Dine-In Express pickup, no passes. Accessibility
devices. Okay, that's where you don't have a waiter, but you pick the food up yourself?
I don't know. That's why I need Dean.
Okay.
Then... There's not the 3D. So there's closed caption, accessibility, premiere, reserve seating, no passes. Then there's Movie XL, Dine-In Express, pickup, reserve seating, no passes. Then there's Premiere, reserve seating, no passes.
I just want to go and sit down.
Then there's Movie XL, Dine-In Express, pickup, no passes. And then there's closed captioning.
All right, so which one did she choose?
Dean, I just want to see the movie.
I have no idea what most of this is.
And that's eight choices for one movie.
One movie.
Yeah, that's something I think that's unique, apparently, to that theater.
I don't know. I've seen the AMC stuff gets a little deep, too.
Just wait for it to come to the Blockbuster.
Yeah, by the way, why are we asking you? You haven't paid for a movie in 30 years.
I thought Dean could help me. I almost texted you last night, Dean, saying, what do I want?
I do once in a while. And when I do, this is what I do. I buy tickets on Fandango.com.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm on.
Because that has all the different theaters, all the different show times. It tells you, you know, whether it's 3D, not 3D, if it's a 70-millimeter screen. I'm recommending this movie on as big a screen as possible. So okay. IMAX 3D would be number one choice. 70 millimeter, I think, would be my second choice with that.
And then 35 millimeter and then 17 and a half millimeter.
Or you could come to my house.
And you can watch it on your phone.
Because I had my phone going the whole time while I was watching. Just kidding. Just ding, ding, kidding. I want movie police, FBI.
How about I give you $5 and do that, Dean?
I'm not, the reclining seats are okay.
Uh-huh.
To me, it gets too comfortable and it's too easy to fall asleep.
Agree.
Once the lights go down. And I am not a fan whatsoever of the order food, have them bring it into the theater. And eat your dinner while you're watching the movie. Popcorn, milk duds, you know, the typical snacks. If you're quiet, is okay. You are not in your living room, and you should not be eating Eggs Benedict while you're...
five-course and the wine steward, and, you know, I mean, all the... Come on.
You don't want a sommelier coming over to you in the middle of the dinner.
And they whisper, and you don't know if it's a white or a red.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what all those designations mean. It must be something particular to MovieCo, I guess. But
all right, well, thank you guys.
As big a screen as possible on
big
this
screen.
One.
Big screen.
When you can reserve seating, it's great because then you can pick your seats, which would be a really funny joke if you were in the movie Captain Underpants.
I was going to say, I saw where you were going, and I shut up. What friends are for. Don't step on your punchline.
I appreciate that. Thank you. But it's, you know, that way it's nice and you don't get to the theater at the last minute and you're, you know, it's
front row.
Someplace where you're not comfortable.
Make sure you pick the seats for the correct theater, because one time when I was going to yoga and I was dropping the kids off at the theater to entertain them while I had a yoga class, I sent them in with reserved seating. They were dropped off at a theater at the Glen. But I bought tickets to the theater in Lincoln Park there. So there was people in their seats, and then they tried to call me, but I was in yoga. But they just let them sit in different seats. But I would just check your theater because the app, like, will automatically
pick. That's all going to be
pick
a part of your DCFS report.
I know.
Hopefully I'll pick the right movie in the right
time. I felt awful. So anyway, just check your theater.
I'm trying to find MovieCo right here while I'm on Fandango, and it brought up MovieCo Alabama.
I'm not going there, Dean.
By the way, it's MUVICO.
Yeah.
I put it in right. It corrected my spelling because computers are smarter than I am.
All right, lightning round. Bob and Doug McKenzie are back.
It's Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas bringing back their characters from the classic SCTV series and movie and hit song. They're going to be doing a benefit in Toronto on July the 18th. Along with a lot of other old SCTV regulars. It's going to be amazing, but really significant here is that Rick Moranis has all but retired since 1991 when his wife passed away, and he decided to stop working to raise his children.
Wow.
So this really is essentially his first performance in over 20 years.
Yeah,
so
25 years.
Super significant that this is happening.
I guess I hadn't noticed. I feel like he's been around, but obviously not. Kathy Griffin's holding a press conference
this
morning.
Press conference at 11
o'clock. To say what?
Chicago time this morning. She's having a press conference with an attorney. We don't know what she's going to say exactly.
How about I'm not going to say anything else because I'd like this to go away?
Probably would be the smartest thing to do. So I don't know if there's some new legal things that are coming up here. She's just trying to explain more what's going on. I have no idea. So we'll follow the news on this later on today.
And Megyn Kelly gets Vladimir Putin for her premiere.
How about that? How about that? Is that a good thing?
That's a good get.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, no, that's a good get.
I'm not sure these days if I want to be anywhere near Vladimir Putin.
I'd like 10 minutes with Vlad. Here's my dream show. Vlad, Madigan, and Trump.
Wow.
Just bang, bang, bang.
Oh, my God. Then you can mic drop your
gun. I don't mean bang, bang, bang. Everybody settle down. Just one after the other.
Captain Underpants. Maybe I would like it if he called me and go, Dean, Vlad Putin calling.
I have which theater should I choose for Captain Underpants?
Dean, you sound like my grandpa.
I have killer recipe for borscht. I would like to be on your food show. Right. And then we kill moose and squirrel.
Please, please book Vladimir Putin for the food show. Please. Make me happy. You're on Sunday, yes?
Yep.
All right, cool. Have fun.
We have Vladimir Putin. Putin's going to be co-hosting the whole show with me on Sunday.
You think they have this much fun on TV? Because I'm telling you, they don't. All right, thanks, buddy.
Bye.
That's Dean Richards. Back with a big story next, and then my friend Vince Pellegrino will be here. We'll pick a U.S. Open winner, and we talk about the BMW Championship this fall, too. Stand by for that. First, this.
Hi, this is...
And this is going to culminate just the second wire-to-wire winning performance this season, joining Jordan Spieth, who did it at the Masters. There is a new number one in golf, and for the first time, Jason Day is on top of the world with a win at the BMW Championship.
Going back to Conway Farms, we'll talk about that coming up in just a second. Live in studio, the handsome and talented Vince Pellegrino from the Western Golf Association, which does just a great, great, great job year after year after year with the top flight amateur events around the Midwest. And, of course, taking care of the BMW Championship as well. And I would encourage all of you club members in particular to make sure that you're contributing to the Chick Evans Scholarship Foundation. Dr. Kevin Most, amongst those who we know, who would not have been able to finish college and go to med school without being a caddy scholar. Yeah. And Vince, you can speak to this better than anybody, but the caddy job is one of the great jobs you can have. And for some people, it's your first job. For other people, they do it all the way through high school, maybe even into college. And get proficient at it before you go to college, and you can end up having college paid for, right?
Like I did. Yeah, I mean, I certainly wouldn't be where I'm at today in my career if I didn't receive the Evans Scholarship. I caddied at Riverside Golf Club for 8 seasons, and then received the Evans Scholarship to attend Indiana University. And it's truly a life-changing opportunity. We've got over 930 kids in school right now at 20 different universities, and it keeps growing. We want to get to 1,000 kids.
To make you feel great.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, in all of our tournaments benefit the Evans Scholars Foundation.
So including the BMW.
Including BMW. So at the end of the day, you buy a ticket, you buy hospitality, you're benefiting a great cause. And, you know, caddying is a perfect summer job for a kid. Gets them out of the house, you know, learns a little responsibility, the value of the dollar.
Well, you get exercise, you learn about money.
Right.
You talk to people you wouldn't normally have access to. Yeah. You learn grown-ups say things that only stay on the golf course. You also learn about how to handle yourself because, you know, people be more than willing to give you advice. So you're right. It's got everything you need. And you learn about honor and dishonor, depending on who's in your group.
Well, I caddied at Riverside.
Oh, well, then you were fine there. Yeah. And Larry Wirt still owes you money.
Right.
Well, nice to see you again. Let's start with the U.S. Open. U.S. Open is coming back to the Midwest, going to be at Erin Hills. A lot of people listening are probably going to make the trek. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it kind of depends on the weather. I mean, if you've ever been up to Erin Hills, it's a big golf course. It's a spread-out golf course. They can play it up to 8,000 yards. So pending, if it's really hot, it could be a really grueling test for these guys. You may see, you know, walking 4 days in a row, you may see some of the younger players really rise to the top. I mean,
well,
it's going to be
right about this? An 8.5 mile walk?
They
got to be taking some people from greens to tees, right?
Well, I would imagine they've had some on-course shuttles, yeah. You know, to get people around. But
it's a long walking. I played it 2 days in a row, and by the second day, I didn't think I was going to be able to play.
Well, it's crazy when you think about it. The average golf course is 4 miles or something like that. Yeah. When you walk 4 miles, it's like twice that.
Yeah, and I think what they'll try to do to you know minimize the length is get it really firm and fast. That's what they want to do. Now I think if they do that, you know, now you're looking at that favors some of the shot makers, not necessarily the bombers, because the shorter guys can keep off if it's playing firm and fast. So you're looking like guys like Phil, Jordan Spieth, who've got great short games to if the golf course
Zach
is playing
Johnson,
firm,
if he's playing
absolutely
better.
No question. He won at Conway in 2013. So
right.
If it's soft, then you got to kind of look at the bombers. You got to look at DJ. You got to look at Jason Day, who won in 15 at the BMW.
The great thing about the Open is the rough is high enough to lose a tourist. So because of that, the big hitters, Dalai Lama, you know, you're hitting your ball into the junk. You're going to lose some shots.
And I think it's not your typical rotation of U.S. Open courses. I mean, this is the first time they put a U.S. Open there, just like Chambers Bay was the first time they played Chambers Bay. Jordan Spieth played real well at Chambers Bay first time. Right. So I think it's kind of an even playing field when it comes to experience on this golf course.
And you played it how long ago, 2 years ago?
I played it about 2 years ago. Yeah, it was a very challenging. It reminded me of, obviously, a links course, a very European type
course. Yeah, and you're in good
course.
Shape, and you came back, and you were sore for 3 days.
Well, yeah, two. No, but you're right. It's a long walk. And you know what's cool about it? It's hilly, obviously, and you're going down. There's not just, you know, a direct path down the fairway. You're going up hills and around these little rock paths, mm-hmm. which adds to the ambiance of it. But it's a beautiful, beautiful course. Right.
Well, but here's the thing from Vince's position, because one of the things you have to do as tournament director is worry about every detail. Mm-hmm. One of the questions about Erin Hills when they booked the tournament there, when the USGA said, we want to come there, is no hotels, one access road. What have they been doing to change all of that?
Parking, you know, where are you going to park? I mean, I think it's definitely.
Did they put another road in?
Well, I haven't been up there recently. I haven't checked out what they've done as far as the infrastructure is concerned. But I mean, knowing they've had this tournament for so long, they've been planning for this for, you know, 5 odd years to prepare for all this. So, you know, I think it's a global competition. So you've got people and corporations coming in from all over the world. I'm sure they've made some really good modifications locally, and I think a lot of people are just going to, you know, like I am, probably just drive up from Chicago and head back. I mean, it's a 2.5 hour drive. It's not exactly easy to get to, but, you know, I think people will, if you build it, they will come. So
we're not going to see like sponsor tents with triage cots for the people that just because they couldn't get a hotel?
Well, maybe.
Okay, just a couple, huh? There's an idea you hadn't thought of.
It won't be possible for this tournament, I know, but if you have a chance to play it next year, stay there. Because that's what we did on the grounds, and it was really cool.
Are they cabins or something?
Like a little B&B, kind of like a little inn.
Yeah. I've not played
it. Irish pub there, too.
I've not played it yet, but
maybe you and I will go, Steve.
Let's go now.
Stay in the B&B.
Yeah. All right. Get a nice little corner room.
Yeah, it's not like we haven't spooned before. That's true. All right, so here's what we'll do. We'll take a break for traffic. We'll come back. Vince Pellegrino's here from the Western Golf Association. What's the website for Chick Evans information?
It's WesternGolfAssociation.com.
Okay, so just WesternGolfAssociation.com, and you can find out about how you can help the Chick Evans Scholarship Program. But when we come back, I want to talk about the BMW. And also, you guys have presence. It's not just Dave.
Oh, yes.
You guys have, I mean, listen, Vince takes care of me all the time. Yes. You guys have presence. All right, that's coming up. First off, with your traffic, here's Mary. Vince Pellegrino is here from the Western Golf Association. They, of course, are the presenters of the BMW Championship coming back to Conway Farms. We like when you're in town.
It's a little easier drive to get to Lake Forest.
Well, it's a fun venue, and that clip you heard to open this segment was Jason Day, who won it. Wasn't that the year that there was a 59, right? Or was that the previous?
That was the previous year. Yeah, okay. So Furyk with a 59. But, yeah, I mean, Jason Day, wire to wire, just played incredible. That's when he vaulted to number one in the world. It was just incredible. Jordan Spieth actually had a hole-in-one that year
right.
on the second hole,
yeah.
which BMW endowed a scholarship for an Evans Scholarship
cool.
in his name. So instead of Jordan walking away with a car, like, you know, he needs another car,
he's doing all right.
The BMW sponsored another Evans Scholarship. So the scholarship sales so great.
Tickets and things, you get them how?
Get them on BMWChampionship.com. Pretty easy. We've got a pretty good Father's Day package coming up for those who are looking for something for the dad. It's two any day turnaround tickets, so you can go any day of the tournament. You get two of those. You get a souvenir pin flag, so you can have Jordan and all the guys sign that flag when you get there. And then we're going to waive all the processing fees. So it's a real good deal, and it's a nice gift for dad.
I might buy that for me. Dave?
And you also have the Western Amateur coming up, which I had the pleasure of being at Skokie Country Club yesterday at a media outing out there.
Gary Holloway and company.
Yes.
And hi, Gary.
And just a great day, Vince. I mean, it was terrific,
perfect,
beautiful course.
Perfect weather, great golf course. I mean, just in fantastic condition. You know, that tournament's going to happen the first week of August, and it's, you know, it's the next Jason Days and Jordan Spieth of the world, you know, the high-level amateur golf. We had Dylan Meyer and Nick Hardy from University of Illinois who are at the top of their games. Dylan's number one in the world, amateur rankings yesterday, and what a fantastic day.
And, Dave, you were playing with an 18-year-old kid who hasn't even gotten out of puberty yet, who is hitting it three-plus, obviously.
Yeah, pretty much. Gio Tarriato, I believe, is the way he plays at Illinois, just finished his freshman season. So he was playing in the NCAA championship a few days ago, and he was out there yesterday and just about to get on a plane to go home to Belgium and to play tournaments there during the summer.
Nice kid.
Great kid, and he's got, I'm sure, a very, very bright future.
Man, it's fun. Yeah. So you got a pretty good gig, Vince Pellegrino. I don't know if you're aware of that. I know it's a lot of work, but you look like you're having fun.
Well, you know, that day on the golf course yesterday, it was pretty rough with Dave and playing Skokie Country Club, but it's all in the name of reasons.
Was anyone injured?
Nobody was injured yesterday, so we made it
close.
Through the day. It was a couple people who were close, but yeah, I appreciate that. It's nice to... you know, it's nice to be in the golf business and also give back at the end of the day. So, I mean, I think that is important. And a lot of people don't know that all PGA Tour events benefit charities, whether it's the John Deere Classic or the BMW Championship. I mean, we're all out here to donate back, and ours just happens to be one in the Evan Scowers Foundation. So we're really proud of that.
And we got a new PGA Tour commissioner since last time that you guys were here. So you're continuing to tell him I'm unhappy with the fact that we don't have more professional events in Chicago. You've told him that?
I've talked to him several times. Jay Monahan's a great guy. And actually, you know, next year we are also hosting at Exmoor Country Club, the Constellation Senior Players Championship. Right. So they're listening. So it's a Champions Tour.
So I am
event.
Breaking
yeah,
through.
Yeah, you're breaking through. Absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Speaking of giving back, you are going to give back now to Dave and Andrea.
Well, it's not a kale cake.
Vince,
you should try some, really.
Well, we're gonna try a little because I think, you know, one of the things I thought of today is it would be a great concession item at the BMW Championship this year.
Here you go.
So we'll
Mary, you hear that?
There it is. I'm not making that again.
I don't care how rich it makes me. But you brought golf balls for these?
I brought golf balls for these guys, yeah. It's a BMW Championship logoed golf ball. So if you lose them, it's great promotion for the tournament.
That's
so
excited
about that.
Well, then we're guaranteed to promote the tournament.
For sure.
Vince Pellegrino, website again is?
It's bmwchampionship.com.
And for Chick Evans?
For Chick Evans, it's westerngolfassociation.org.
And both of them link back and forth. Thanks, buddy.
You got it. Cool.
Back with our CLTV hour next.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Music is a world within itself, with a language we all understand. With an equal opportunity for all to sing, dance, and clap their hands.
Happy Friday, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. We continue with show number 917. June is National Cancer Survivors Month. And we got a good story here in studio, but we can never raise enough money to fight the good fight. And that's why we've asked these two folks to join us, Maddie Oliver and Gateway Cancer Research Chief Development Officer. You should see the size of his business card. Michael Burton is here as well. Welcome to both of you. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you so
nice
much for having us.
Good. Thank you so much for having us.
Nice to be here. And Maddie, you look fabulous. How do you feel?
Thank you so much. I feel great. Right, yeah, I'm feeling good today.
Let's go backwards. Tell your story. You're a dancer in high school.
Yes. So I was 17 when I was a dancer in high school. Dancing was my favorite thing. I actually worked for a company
And this won't surprise you. Me too.
Well, I worked for a company called Pulse Entertainment.
Okay.
So we would go to weddings, bar mitzvahs, sweet 16s. And I'll never forget the night. It was midwinter and I was at a bar mitzvah. And I was doing just one type of dance move and I felt the worst pain in my right hip. And I was
like, you think you broke your ankle or your leg?
It was
in
my hip, yeah. So I thought, you know, this isn't right. I thought I just sprained it.
Okay.
Wasn't able to dance for a couple months and it slowly was deteriorating. I was like, you know, on crutches eventually. So we're like, all right, we need to see someone. Because I was seeing physical therapists and they were like, this isn't a sprain.
And because you're a dancer and you're in good shape and you're an athlete, you're thinking, I'll just walk it off, I'll be fine. So you go in and what happens when you see the doctor?
So I see the doctor and they say, okay, well, it's a tumor, but it's benign. It's not cancerous, so you're fine.
Okay.
So we go on for another month thinking, great, it's a benign tumor. They're going to burn it out for me. We go into the surgery and they burn out this benign tumor. So that means that it's not cancerous. Turns out a couple days later, it's even worse than it was before.
The pain was worse.
The pain was so much worse. I couldn't walk. So
But now you're freaking out, I would assume.
So now I'm freaking out. Yeah. I'm like, what is wrong? Something's really like bad because I was supposed to be able to walk. So we called Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. My dad had to carry me down the stairs, put me in the car.
Wow.
Takes me to Children's Hospital. I'm in excruciating pain. And the orthopedic surgeon put me right into surgery. The next day they told us this is cancer and it's malignant. So it's...
So bone cancer, for to make it in the simplest terms? I know there's different types.
Yeah, so osteosarcoma is bone cancer. And where I had it was right in my hip socket and the ball joint. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of, it didn't happen a lot. It was very rare. So he said, what we're going to have to do is give you chemo for about 3 months until we can actually give you the surgery to even open it up. They didn't want to open up and, you know, that hip and spread.
Right, stop the progression of the tumor before they could remove it or damage it. So fast forward 3 months from that, the chemo goes fine.
Chemo was going fine. Great.
Easy for me to say. Right. Chemo goes as good as can be expected.
Right.
Okay.
Luckily, I was responding very well to it. 3 months.
And you're how old at this point? 19?
Now I'm 21.
21. Okay.
So I was 17. So it's been 4 years, but 3 years since I've been cancer free.
All right. So what? But back then, you're 17, 18 years old.
Oh yeah,
you're
going through all this.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. You're living the time of your life, you ought to be just worried about having fun, dancing, and being a kid.
Well, I was most worried, believe it or not. I mean, it was the dancing because I love dancing.
Sure.
But it was my hair. I remember the day I had
you're
to
a girl,
get my
of course.
Bald. Yeah, I was completely bald. So I remember the day I had to get my head shaved, and I was like, oh. But
I bet you look great.
Aww. I bet you did too. You got a beautiful face.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right. So as we continue the good news part of this story, we don't want to hang the listeners out in too much drama here before we get to the good news part. So the 3 months of chemo go by. They go in. They do the surgery. Did they get it in one?
They did. They got it in one. They replaced the whole thing, and they replaced half of my femur, so my leg. It went great.
So do you have an artificial hip now?
Oh, yeah. I have a little bit of a limp, but I call it a swagger.
No, this is great.
It is a swag. Yeah.
But this is going to be so great because when you're like 75 and you fall,
I'm like,
you've already got it done.
I'm
you're good to go.
Woman. So like,
you're already a superhero.
Oh, yeah. So I'll be okay.
And I love your attitude. I love your smile. But this had to be hell for you to go through and your family as well.
It was. It was. But, you know, I was lucky. I was on a lot of pain meds. So I sometimes think it's funny. I don't remember a lot of it. And I had my best friends here right now. I have her and I had my family. I had so much overwhelming almost support.
Family support is key.
Oh, yeah. If I didn't have that, I wouldn't have gotten through. And it was Gateway as well when they introduced themselves to me.
Such a great support staff and such a great attitude. Mm-hmm. I want to know when they told you, okay, well, we thought this was benign and now it's malignant. I just want to know what went through your head. You probably were like...
And don't say the exact words that went through your head.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I won't say exactly what I was thinking.
For the cancer.
But you seem like you're a fighter, so I assume.
So I think that's what it is. You're scared, but I think you just go into survivor, like, flight mode. You're just like, okay, what do I do now? When they told us, my whole family, none of us were like, oh my God, this is crazy. We all just said, what's next? Mm-hmm. What do we do from
here? I had a friend of mine, you're old enough to hear this kind of talk. I had a friend of mine who had a difficult cancer, and whenever I talked to her, I'd go, how are you doing? She goes, I'm kicking cancer's ass.
Oh, yeah.
Getting up in the morning.
I mean, I think that's the best attitude you can have. Yeah. I think that's what the half of what gets you through it is just your attitude, purely your attitude.
Right. It's not fair. It's not right, but you don't get to live in that world.
Right.
Yeah. You're pretty impressive. I don't know if you know that.
And now you're a role model for other cancer survivors.
I hope so.
Younger than you, maybe, who are coming to look to you for advice and guidance.
What are you doing with your life now?
Well, so with my life right now, I'm actually, if you guys know where Thomas Jefferson University is, it's right in Center City in Philadelphia. Yep. And I'm actually there for nursing. I just finished my first year.
Wow,
I want to be a pediatric oncologist. So
give back,
do the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Good for you. Yeah. Wow, that's fabulous.
Come back here to Lori. We need you in Chicago.
But you know what? It's the ultimate truth, right? Because I'm going to get Michael in here for this because Michael's seen 1,000 cases and more. Because when you're at that point where you go, why me, why me? Because everybody's entitled to that. But there's always somebody worse off.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at little kids, little babies.
Oh, yeah.
Little kids 3, 4, 5 years old dealing with cancer.
Right.
That's not fair.
No,
that's
not
right. Well, you're impressive. You really are.
Thank you so much.
So now Michael's got to follow this.
It's going to be tough.
Gateway Cancer Research Chief Development Officer means?
So I, with Gateway, I help Gateway raise the resources that it needs to fund clinical trials. So
the new drugs that are coming along, we need the clinical trials to figure out if they're going to be great.
Absolutely right. And Maddie's journey from a 17-year-old cancer patient to a 21-year-old cancer survivor, I mean, it's an amazing personal story, and it's also a story about how important clinical trials are in helping patients feel better, live longer. at Gateway, what we really want is we want a world where a cancer diagnosis is no longer feared. And so for 25 years, we have been investing tens of millions of dollars in over 150 cancer trials. And, you know, what's really happening is we're making those investments in some of the most prestigious and some of the most productive cancer centers in the world, including MD Anderson, Memorial Sloan Kettering, here in Chicago at Lurie, and at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, which is where Maddie participated in a Gateway-funded.
So you're spending the money where you know these trials are going to see the results you need to see if to figure out if the drugs are going to work.
Absolutely. We have excellent peer review, so we really know where some of the most innovative research is taking place, and we're funding it in very serious ways.
I want to talk to you more about that and more with Maddie in a second as well. For people that want to read Maddie's story, what do they do? How do they follow you? Social media? Is that the best way?
Oh, yeah. Follow me on Twitter. Follow me on Facebook.
What's your Twitter handle?
I'm joking. I actually don't have a Twitter. I was just trying to
you're being too hip for the room.
Too hip for the room. You know what? Actually, you can go on Gateway.
Absolutely.
The website. I would encourage
it to you. Plug in Michael. Unbelievable.
Thank you.
What is the Gateway website?
So it is www.gatewaycr.org. And anyone who wants to learn more about cancer trials and our role in all of that, should feel free to go to that.
Real patient stories in there, too?
Absolutely.
Good. That's nice to hear. Are you on Facebook?
I am on Facebook.
Oh, you want to
mention Maddie
it?
Oliver.
Just find your Facebook.
Maddie, M-A-D-D-Y.
M-A-D-D-Y. Yeah, and I'm also on Instagram. Same thing. Very boring. Just Maddie Oliver. Okay. Maybe you guys can help me come up with a cooler name. But.
I like it.
Maddie's
like
pretty
your...
cool. You like it? Maddie's pretty cool. I think you're okay.
All right.
920, back with more in a moment on 720 WGN. Shouldn't really treat grilling out with pre-made food like roughing it, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Still sounds good.
It's National Cancer Survivors Month. Maddie Oliver is here. You just heard her story. And we're also talking with Michael Burton, Gateway Center Research Chief Development Officer. Part of his job is to make it rain. Find as much money as you can. All right. Now, these drugs, you could name drugs for me. They're not going to mean anything to the general population. But my understanding with trials are that you have to do a number of trials before you find one that's promising. Then you have to take it through second level, third. Because sometimes people will hear from the FDA, we've got it. We got a great breakthrough, but it's 10 years before you hear about it. Is that time frame getting any shorter?
It is. And that process of really trying to understand just how effective a new drug is a complicated one. And it's also a really rigorous one, obviously, because the stakes are so high. So typically, it goes through a drug will go through three phases. So phase one will test safety. Phase two will test effectiveness. And phase three is a bigger phase. And that involves large groups of people, and what they're doing is they're assessing the standard of care with the new potential therapeutic to understand which is better.
And obviously there's ways you would qualify for a trial because the drug needs to be tested on people who it would benefit most. Are you able to tunnel that down?
Yeah. So the amazing thing that's happening now in cancer research is we're really understanding this disease at the molecular level. And we're learning that no two cancers are the same. And it's the molecular signature of a cancer in this person or that person that really gives us some insight into whether or not they'll respond to a potential new therapy.
Trials, new therapies, and the funding for them are so important and have broken such ground as far as treatment and advancing and the cure. What would you just say to someone, either of you, who might be either scared or nervous or not sure what to do?
Well, I mean, I was in that position. Gateway kind of introduced themselves to us through our oncologist. He said, you know, I want you guys to know about Gateway. It's these trials. And we were new to even cancer. We didn't know what that was. So we were like a little scared, to be honest, but we jumped into it. We said, we'll do it because we were willing to do whatever at that point. It was the best thing I could have done.
And tell me if you had the same vibe. I mean, my understanding of trials, and Michael, you can correct this, is you're not a lab experiment where you're shooting darts against a wall. This is very carefully considered if you're put in the program.
Yeah,
absolutely. And there is some public misconception about trials. But that point, Steve, is just so important. It is not being a guinea pig. It has nothing to do with that. There's enormous care that goes into this process. And oftentimes when you're on a trial, you are receiving the therapeutic that will be the standard of care in the future.
Maddie, you seem like the person who would say your best day is tomorrow. But was your best day when you found out that you were cancer free?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was nothing like it. It was actually on my birthday, October
2nd. How great is that?
Yeah.
How great is that?
It was lucky, yeah. So my whole family was there celebrating. I turned 18, and they came in and they said, you know, the chemo is working amazingly. We haven't seen it work like this in so long. And it's crazy. I mean, we literally, we're all just crying and just in disbelief, but...
You look great. You feel great?
Yeah, I feel really, really great.
You know what really sucks, though, is how does anybody get your birthday present now? Nobody can top that. Right. Nobody.
When we didn't help matters with the kale cake there. Sorry, Maddie.
Sorry, I still didn't try it yet.
So October 2nd, here's what I want you to do for us. On October 2nd, okay. I want you to shoot us a note to tell you how great your life is.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Sounds
sure
great.
Call us.
I will.
All right. It's great to meet you guys. You're really a great spokesperson.
Thank you very much.
And Michael, thank you. Please keep up the great work at Gateway.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
National Cancer Survivors Month. That's what it's all about. We're beating more of it every day. 927, big story coming up on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I wish I could say it was sexier, but 90% of my time is walking between doors, standing at doors, nobody answering the door. Hey, how you doing? My name is Will Guzzardi. Mi nombre es Will Guzzardi. Yeah, I'm running for state representative in the neighborhood. I'm running against the incumbent in the primaries this March. Her name's Toni Berrios.
My commitment is to those I serve. It's an honor to fight for our community.
Well, let's be clear. We're talking about Toni Berrios, the daughter of Joe Berrios, who's head of the Cook County Democratic Party.
When you're going up against the machine in this way, you're going up against a candidate who has access to virtually unlimited money.
We're going to prove that we can take on the establishment and we can win.
I would argue that this is one of the more important political things you can experience outside of Election Day. If you really believe the Chicago political machine has done more damage than ever, and if you really are committed to hoping for and helping make some change, you need to see the movie we're about to plug heavily here, as we've done before with Will Guzzardi. Will, welcome back to the show. Apparently, Will got another call.
Uh-oh. Oh, no. The machine got
Will?
The
Will?
Machine got to him.
Will?
There he is.
Does he have Madigan's throat today?
No. No, he's on his phone. Uh-oh.
Okay. To unlock that, let me put it on hold, and let me try Laura here. Bear with us. We're on till 10.
Yeah.
Well, let me try this. And
I'm here. Oh, hello. I think they just plugged me in.
Oh, is this? Okay. Now we're good. All right. Hi, Will. How are you?
I'm great. Great to be on the program.
Yeah. Thanks for being back. And Laura Wilson Falsgraf. Hi, Laura.
Hi. How are you? Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Pardon the bumpy opening. All right. Let's go backwards here. Will, explain what happened when you ran for the 39th.
Well, so I ran actually twice for this seat. I ran the first time in 2012 in the Democratic primary, and we lost by about 100 votes. It was this very close race. I was 24 years old at the time. I was a total political novice. No one really expected us to do nearly as well as we did. And then I ran again in 2014, and, you know, our opponents really saw it coming that time, and it was a very hotly contested race. And, you know, the film tells the story of that campaign and all what happened there. But the end result, spoiler alert, is that I'm a state representative now and I'm in my second term in the legislature.
And how is this working with Speaker Madigan? And because you weren't his guy.
That's right. I mean, it's been really fascinating. You know, the way it works is that the party sort of stands with its incumbents no matter what, pretty much with occasional exceptions. But, you know, so I was running against the Democratic incumbent. So the Democratic Party was working very hard to keep me out of office. And, you know, I think that that gives me, in some ways, a unique position in the legislature, because rather than being there having had the support of the speaker and the establishment, you know, I got there on my own, under my own steam. So it gives me the ability to be much more sort of vocally critical of our Democratic leadership when I feel like they're doing things the wrong way. I feel sort of liberated to
blocking
to
a budget,
speak truth to power like that. Yeah. 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 Right. Not getting a budget. Exactly.
So there's a topicality. Laura Wilson Falsgraf, how did you become aware of this story?
Well, I am actually a resident of the 39th district, and I had heard of friends actually volunteering for Will's campaign, and I just became fascinated by the storyline. I actually first heard about him in 2014, and knowing about how, you know, he lost his race by just 125 votes in 2012.
And I'm sure they were all properly counted. I'm sure nobody missed a vote.
There was a recount,
Can I interject with a quick story there?
Eh.
on election night, the polls were very close, and there was one precinct right in the heart of my opponent's sort of base area, one precinct that the votes didn't show up at all until the next morning.
Oh, how about that?
not to suggest any.
Look doubt, what we that. Found.
It's like a scene out of a movie.
And Laura, continue.
Yeah, so, I mean, the drama's kind of baked in there, right? As a filmmaker, I was fascinated by how close the race was. You know, Will's youth, he was 24 when he first ran. And, you know, that's a big undertaking for such a young person to go for. And, of course, also the narrative of, you know, progressive really trying to take on what's been super entrenched Democratic Party that hasn't always moved the state in a progressive direction as a progressive myself. So I'm so glad that I did, because it turned out to be a fascinating story.
It's a powerful documentary. I'm glad you made it, Laura. I want to know from both of you, what surprised you the most? Will, when you went into this, what surprised you the most? And Laura, in filming this and doing the research and watching Will go through this process, what just amazed you?
Well, it's good that you asked that, Will, because I would think this is a two-step answer for you, because the first time you go in, you're a kid. The second time you go in, you're a little older kid.
Right.
But the second time you go in, understanding a little bit more what you're up against, right?
Yeah, it's very true. And certainly, I mean, the first time I ran for office, you know, everything is a learning experience. You know, I had never called a member of my family or a friend or anybody and ask them for money. Like that was an incredibly harrowing and unpleasant experience. And I had to do it thousands of times, and then calling complete strangers and asking them for money. You know, like the nuts and I've never knocked on a stranger's door and told them to vote for me. Like all those things were learning experiences the first time around.
Well, you probably thought, and how could you think this? What's the matter with you that the best candidate would win? That's probably what you thought, right?
Right.
You know, I think I hope I wasn't that naive, you know, but...
All right, and the second time around, once you've been exposed to the system, what'd you do better than you did the first time?
Well, I think, you know, we did everything better, I'd say. I think I was, you know, just a more comfortable candidate and better at ease with, you know, talking to people. And I think our sort of tactics were better. Our campaign, the operations of our campaign were better. But in terms of surprises... you know, and this is sort of what the film centers around in some ways. We knew that they were going to attack me in some way, right? We knew they were going to have something critical to say about me, but we didn't really know what it was going to be. You know, we figured maybe, oh, he's too young. He's from North Carolina. He's not from Chicago. You know, he's an East Coast out of town or whatever. And it turned out to be this crazy thing about me being like a friend of pedophiles. I wanted to let sex offenders near our children, and that I was a danger to our children. And that was the theme of my opponent's entire campaign in this way that we didn't really, couldn't possibly have seen coming. So that sort of changes the whole dynamic of the race, as you'll see in the film.
And Laura, you're an Illinois resident and you're a taxpayer. Were you surprised at the pay-to-play and the strong-arming that goes on when you were filming?
Yeah, you know, I think the ads, you know, no one really could have seen that coming. So that was a really big surprise. I think that the Berrios campaign sent out, 40-plus mailers in, you know, like a month and a half. And most of them were kind of around that theme of the sex offender attack. I'd never seen anything like that in my life as a voter. So that was really shocking. And also I was shocked that they thought that that would work. You know, I've worked in politics. I actually worked on the Obama campaign in 2012. And so that really, threw me for a loop. But I honestly think that while there is that like machine centered story to the film and to what Will went through, you know, the more interesting story to me and the more powerful one was just the fact that I had never really, been heavily involved in local, hyper-local politics before.
Right.
You know, I'd moved around as a kid. I lived in D.C. for a while. I came back to Chicago. And so I never really felt rooted in a community. And when we started filming and, like, the neighborhood just started buzzing about this, you know, young candidate running and what he was trying to do, you know, I'd go down to the coffee shop down the street and I'd just overhear people talking about a local state reps race, which is, like, really unusual and inspiring. And I think the way that volunteers came out and turned out for Will. I mean, Will, I don't know if you have like numbers on how many people came out for some of your canvases, but huge numbers of people in this tiny district would go out and knock on doors every weekend. And so that was really inspiring for me, and especially like this day and age that we find ourselves in. I think, you know, we can't forget that like the power of volunteering and getting involved and just talking to your neighbors is really palpable. So
the way the system was set up as it was supposed to work, talk to the people who you'd like to vote for you and encourage them that you will work for them and not work for the machine. I'm impressed. I really am. And the main thing now is to get as many people to see this as possible. So how do we do that?
Well, so the film will be showing this weekend at the Chicago Underground Film Festival. Okay. It'll be at 3 p.m. At the Logan Theater tomorrow, Saturday. And after that, you know, we're hoping to host community screenings with organizational partners all over the city and state, really bringing people together to not only watch the film, which is just short, it's a 30-minute film, but also talk about, you know, what we can learn from Will's experience for both, like, young candidates who are interested in running or for people who want to organize and volunteer and think about how to apply the lessons learned.
And Will, is this going to be an on-demand thing anytime?
You have to ask Laura about that. I think.
Well, let's get it there. Let's figure out a way. Yeah. Let's figure out a way to get it on demand. And the reason is, yeah, it's about hyper-local politics, but the Madigan story is starting to get national interest because Illinois, as the fifth largest state in the country, has this tremendous outflow of population and huge political problems and money problems like nobody's ever seen. And the national this is the positive legacy of Donald Trump. There's never been more millennials that have been interested in going, wait, I'm getting this? This is the system you're leaving me?
Right.
So we need Will to be cloned over and over again around the country. And I think this film could go a long way towards doing that.
We're definitely
hoping to do that. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I hope that one of the outcomes of this, one of the takeaways from it is, we were up against a lot. We were up against long odds. But the way we were able to overcome all this money and all these attacks and everything else was just, you know, people getting together and deciding that they wanted better. It wasn't that I was some sort of like spectacular hero. I mean, I think when you watch the film, you see like, this is just some regular idiot like me, but the thing that really, you know, overcame all of that was all of these people from our community deciding
you fired them up, man.
How they wanted politics to be. Yeah, yeah. And I think now in this moment, when people are so fired up, you know, we're so passionate, we're so frustrated with what's going on in Washington. I mean, you know, climate change is going to kill our planet, and Trump just says, oh, too bad. You know, like, people are motivated and fired up. I hope that this film inspires people to channel that energy into getting involved in local politics where they can really make a difference.
Nicely done by both of you. And let me just tell you, and Will, no one's listening now. It's just you and me talking. I want you to listen to me now. It's Grandpa Steve talking, okay? I've been around a while. So let me just tell you, there's going to be people that are going to be offering you money. There's going to be people that are going to offer you influence. There's going to be people that are offering you cash, trips, and prizes. And you're going to say no, Will. You're going to say no because you're the hope for the future, my friend. Those riches will come in much different ways. Don't take anything that ruins this. Are we clear?
Yes, sir.
All right. That's all I wanted to hear. The 39th.
Yeah, timely advice.
I know you're too smart to fall into that trap, and that makes me feel good as well. Laura Wilson Falsgraf and Will Gazzardi, the 39th. And Laura, please let us know if we get to an on-demand situation.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us.
All right. Thanks for being on for both of you. There you go.
This is really good to
see. That's the guy we need. Gazzardi. Back after this.